The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
So after we take the mug shots, we bring them on down here where they wait to be interviewed by the arresting officer. Trust me, kids, you do not want to be sitting on these benches. We call this place Loserville.
PFW in Progress with Red Kirsch.
He's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, he means well.
Is he all there? Like, mentally?
I think so. Just an odd guy. Kind of weird.
I mean, should we be worried?
No. No.
Paul Perillo.
Don't forget your Rogaine.
Rogaine. Check.
And don't forget to use it. I can totally tell when you forget your hair just looks thinner.
Using of the Rogaine. Check.
And Andy. And Andy?
You have to park so close?
Yeah, what's wrong? You shouldn't be here.
Andy Hart.
Why is that? I'm not supposed to be within 200 feet of a school.
What?
Or Chuck E. Cheese.
Eric Scalavino.
You guys might not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack.
For now, anyway.
And 6 months ago, I thought, wait a second, could it be? And now I know for sure. I just added to my wolf pack. Four of us wolves running around the desert together, looking for strippers.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Hey, guys, you ready to let the dogs out?
What? Do what?
Let the dogs out. You know, like, ooh, let the dogs out. Ooh, ooh.
Yes, we are ready to let the dogs out.
Who let the dogs out?
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. It is Tuesday here in Gillette Stadium. We're talking Patriots for the next 2 hours, 12 to 2 here on Patriots.com Radio. 508-298-0398 is the ACE ticket hotline. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. And as we sit here, the Ravens are having their parade through the streets of Baltimore. Good for them. Happy for them. It's nice.
I'm happy for Dean Pease.
You are? You're happy for him?
Not happy for that.
It's fine.
Ray Hole.
I thought you were pissed.
I'm pissed that we weren't there.
No, I know that, obviously. Yeah. But I thought you were pissed that Baltimore won.
Yeah, I could care less. I was rooting for San Francisco.
I thought you had that, like, Patriot fan. Patriots fans have really, I think, kind of surprisingly so, really galvanized against Baltimore for that game. I mean, to the point where we're 2 days later now, we're still complaining about the officiating.
I think that the fact that Ray Lewis isn't going to be there next year, and we know that, kind of takes away some of that hatred. If we knew that next year he's going to be back, I think that would.
Yeah, but it's even worse. He went out on top. I got to watch him right now. Hold the trophy.
See, but now it's over.
He wanted it to be over with him crying.
There's nothing you can do about it. It's not like next year we'll be able to play Ray Lewis again and beat him.
But he was such an insufferable bore.
We'll have to see him on ESPN with two rings instead of one.
And babbling. You know, I told you I came around on Ray Lewis, but this last month has just been absolutely insufferable.
It's all the way back to
No, I mean, I can like the guy and not think that, you know,
he's a good person.
Have the vitriol that, you know, a lot of other New Englanders do, but I can't stand for the way he's
we'll talk
behaved
about him
over the last month or so.
We'll talk about the game on Sunday. I'm sure we all want to weigh in with what we thought of the game and the electricity going out and Beyonce at halftime.
We had a nice discussion at our cube yesterday.
Yeah, we're done. We've moved on. That was Monday. Today's Tuesday.
Well, we had a good talk around the time that we were wondering if you were ever going to come in.
The fans would, you know, like to know, like to be in on what your thoughts are.
You sure?
Rob Gronkowski. Made the news once again today. A video in Las Vegas of him. I just think, you know, by now I'm sure most of our listeners have seen it, but he was on a stage with his brother's shirt off dancing, and then he ended up doing a wrestling move with his brother.
Was his brother?
I don't know.
Or one of his friends?
A dancer that he was
with. Oh, I thought it was a brother.
I don't know.
I know the brothers. I think Dan, one of them tweeted out, great night with the brothers back together in Vegas. Right. You know, me, Gordy, Gronk. I'm pretty sure it was one of the brothers.
So they were up there, and of course Gronk had his shirt off. And I don't think it has any bearing on, you know, his play for 2013.
Well, is it the shirt thing or is it the falling on his arm?
Yeah,
the
broken arm is what bothers me.
Dancing without the shirt is
This is the first time ever, as Paul will tell you, I'm going to criticize Gronk.
Yeah.
You have a broken arm. You had surgery. You're wearing a big cast. You can have fun without being an a-hole and DDTing your brother on the stage.
Well, Andy, my guess is he was
influenced.
Oh, yes. There's no question.
At the time.
But that's a problem. This is going down the road of a problem. This is going down the road of a disappointing
career.
You really
do. You think so?
Yes.
You're upset about
it. He's crossed the line.
I am
crossed
too.
The line
well,
with
I,
this
I'm
infringed.
I'm not surprised you're upset.
This infringed
upset
upon
before.
His with him. Devoted
No, I have not been upset
team.
With him before, and I've written as much.
You've written as much?
Yes. I wrote a commentary about it last year.
Well, you don't like it when guys do stuff like this.
No, no.
No.
But Andy was
like
very
he says,
vehement.
No, no.
See,
I'm agreeing with Eric. I don't think Eric had any problem with it last year at all. I don't think any of us
yeah,
did, really.
I'm not surprised Eric is upset about this. But I am surprised... With Andy,
it's not, again, he misrepresents
it's not sticking with my agenda.
Andy was, you know, really, you know, up in arms this morning.
Yes, he crossed a line.
And I am surprised that you are.
Why?
Because in the past you've been out and say, I don't care. As long as he comes out and plays.
But this is different. He's putting his arm at risk. Whatever the small risk is, if he can break it again playing football, he can break it doing a DDT on a stage to his brother. And it's just not in the best interest. It's going down the road of, I think he's going to regret it. At some point.
But the point is, though, it's not that he lost, you know, forgot that he had a broken arm. When you're in those type of situations.
Bad stuff happens.
Exactly.
You fall off the stage, you break the other arm, so, then all of a sudden you're walking around in one of those things.
It was a small stage, too.
It may not have been a stage. I don't even know what it was.
Whatever it was, yeah.
So are you really upset, and not just that he did it with a broken arm, but he's putting himself in these situations?
Yeah, he crossed a line. This isn't making out with the girl in the line at the bathroom. This isn't drinking and just, you know, having fun at a party. This crossed the line into stupidity, into Drew Bledsoe land. Let's stage dive off a stage. This crossed that line.
Why does it take an ugly turn?
And I'm
well,
not... In the,
I mean, it's
that
fair
crossed
point.
A line too.
Fair
I don't
point.
Have a problem.
That guy
with
has
Drew.
A broken arm.
No,
the guy didn't.
But diving off the stage, whether your arm is previously broken or not, is stupid. If you're the $100 million quarterback,
right?
Especially with what happened when he jumped off.
Well,
the stage.
Yeah,
well, yeah, but that's
the
separate.
Thing you think about before you
exactly.
Do it, like,
it's not
exactly.
A good idea to
exactly.
Stage dive
right.
if you're in that line of work. It's just it's a dumb thing. It's taking an unnecessary risk.
Right.
Do you really need to do that? Is your life going to be incomplete if you don't dive off that stage? You can't just enjoy the show, you know, be on the stage, take it in. You cross a line, and there's no specific rule of where that line is. There's common sense. There's judgment.
And
this was poor judgment.
And you juxtapose that with the news of the other tight end who received a very big contract extension this past year, Aaron Hernandez, who the news about him today, as Andy retweeted earlier, is that he's renting out a place in California to spend time with Tom Brady to work out.
Because we know Brady's not coming back here to work out.
But my point is...
Whatever, but that's
okay
a good
to
example.
Say.
Yeah.
That's okay to say.
Well,
you can't criticize him for putting 13
but here's where they
on the
crisscross
board in a playoff game.
Yeah, he needs to work out with the quarterback. He had a horrific year. Stop dropping the passes. Rob Gronkowski, when he was on the field, dominated like he had the first 2 years and was clearly the best tight end in football.
Well, that is true. But my point is...
If I'm Gronkowski, that's where I say, he needs the work. I don't.
Well, that may be the case, but from an outsider's perspective, it looks like one guy who, and when Hernandez signed, you remember that press conference.
Oh,
he was emotional. He was talking about how much he appreciated, how much he wants to set an example. Yeah. He said all the right things. He also became a father.
A pass dropper.
So maybe that is influencing the way he's behaving off the field. But you have two different extremes for guys who are virtually the same age and are getting paid virtually the same amount.
Right.
One guy is treating it like he's still in a fraternity. Another guy's treating it like, hey, you know what? It's time to grow up.
But he's always going to be in the fraternity. And Fred and I talked about this. Part of the problem is the brothers. We always say these guys are
your
just teenagers
right.
with money.
Right.
But he has the they're doing what they've done their whole life from 4 on with the pillows in the basement or breaking somebody's arm
except
in the
alcohol. That was
my guess is they didn't wait to 21 to start drinking alcohol either. My guess is the alcohol, like a Paul Perillo, started at like 13 or 14, and the brothers were drinking. Do you think
accurate.
That's unfair to assume?
Oh, I'm sure they were drinking beer up there in northern New York.
This is what they do when they go out. They get drunk, they get stupid, ends up with somebody doing push-ups. I mean, he did it at the, was it the ESPYs where on the red carpet he was flying? This is what they do, but at some point you need to think. And you'd like to think that one of the brothers would say... Well, maybe they did afterwards. Maybe they didn't see it coming because it was almost like a wrestling thing. It was almost like it was choreographed. If this was, you know, you'd say Vince McMahon had them do this. He kicked them, you know,
kicked them in the nuts.
He sold the move.
Yeah, big time. But you'd like to think somebody would be the voice of reason in the posse, in the group. Gronk, we can have fun.
So where exactly did the line cross?
Because when he kicked the guy in the nuts and DDT'd him with a broken arm.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I'd be mad if I were the other brother. What are you doing?
Well, maybe they had it worked out ahead of time, like you said. They knew they were going
to
do
it. Well, then that's the perfect time for the brother to say, you have a broken arm.
Maybe it was the younger brother.
Why do we need to do this?
Wasn't thinking about it.
Well, one of them needs to think.
But if they're under
ignorance is not.
But if they're at a club and they're drinking, they're probably not thinking.
Right.
Well, they thought enough to plan it out beforehand on your little scenario.
Well, while they were drinking, maybe they said, "Oh, you know what? Let's go up there and let's do a wrestling move."
Fred, what do you think?
What do I think? I think he looks like a loser. I'm not up in arms about it. You were really mad.
Yes.
See,
I'm
I wasn't
upset.
Mad. I was just like, oh, come on.
Because I like him, and I think he's a very valuable part of this team.
Yeah.
Well, Andy's hurt.
Andy's I'm not hurt at all. I just think you need to know who you are and where your bread is buttered, so to speak.
But that's kind of how I feel. And I think I probably am a little bit more upset about it than Andy is because I'm not advocating that he needs to sit in his apartment
exactly.
and be by himself.
No.
I have no problem with him going out with his brothers to this place. Why
exactly.
does he have to take it a step further and be on stage?
Putting himself drunk. Himself in physical harm.
The alcohol and the brothers are
the
unfortunate concoction of painkillers and alcohol that the PR people always use. For him, it's the unfortunate concoction of drinking and the brothers.
Okay.
When those come together, not hilarity ensues, craziness ensues.
Then if that's true, then he does need to stay in his apartment.
I would agree.
More. If he can't go out without getting to that stage, and I'm not talking about the wrestling move. I think it's poor judgment all around. Last year and this year, we had many examples last year. I don't want him to be a monk and sit by himself. He's a young, single guy, just like his mother said.
Just don't be the other word that rhymes with
not
monk.
Gonna be able to
just
take,
like his mother said. Punk. No, he's a young, good-looking guy.
Yeah. Well, he can be a punk.
I'm not
punk.
Advocating that he just never does anything fun.
You need to make
but,
hay while
but
the
if
sunshine.
He can't have fun without getting to that stage where he's, shirts off and he's
right.
dancing around like a lunatic on stage in a Las Vegas nightclub, then he might need to reevaluate and step back and, as Dr. Phil would say, evaluate what's causing the behavior.
There's no might. He needs to reevaluate what he's doing, why he's doing it, and where he's going. Because this is not going down and my guess is there'll be some people who will reevaluate it for him.
Right.
I can't think Robert's happy. I can't think Bill's happy.
Is it necessary?
I mean, if I owed this guy $50 million and I saw that, I'd be more irate than I am.
Is it necessary in his mind in order to have fun to do that? Is that what I need to do in order to have fun?
That's the question that needs to be asked.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right.
That's what they do. Again, it's the brothers and the alcohol, I think.
Like the offensive linemen, for example, we've heard so many stories over the last 10 years with Matt Light and all those guys. They go out every Monday night because they have the Tuesday off, and they rip it up at barbecue places, and they have beers, and I never once heard of any of these kinds of situations developing. Is that not just as fun as going out and doing, what Gronk does? But why do we have to end up on a stage without a shirt and now take it even a step further to the thing that really crossed the line for Andy is the DDT that he does on his brother.
That crossed the line on so many levels.
Yeah, but I mean,
compounding it all,
his hypocrisy in our society. Imagine if a girl did that. I mean, she'd be branded a what? You know?
A what?
A hoa.
For doing a DDT?
For taking your shirt off and dancing on a table.
Well, if he took his pants
off,
a woman taking her shirt off
is indecent exposure. A guy is not.
If he took his pants off, which he did last year at the Super Bowl,
then that crosses
another line.
But he's injured. He's trying to recover, and he's doing
something that could
make it even worse.
And that's an even more beyond the DDT for Paul's thing, the getting drunk. You're injured. Why would you want to cross that line of anything happening?
And now we assume he was. We don't know that.
That's true.
We're assuming that.
I'm pretty comfortable assuming.
He might just like doing this stuff, you know?
He might.
But
Well, then it's even worse in my mind because now he made a sober decision that I'm going to do a DDT with a broken arm.
It's the behavior that I'm talking about more so than whatever the situations that got him there. I happen to agree with Andy. It's the concoction of this life, you get some alcohol, you get the brothers together, and we're the Gronkowskis, and this is how we party. Okay, if that's how you party, if that's where it has to get to that length for you to have fun, then you need to start doing something else to have fun.
And you know who I blame here, too? And this is going to sound very pompous and a-hole-ish, but I think he's injected himself in Rob's career. That's the father. He's clearly a part of the career. You know, the flakes, the...
Flutie, the Gronk flakes.
Gronk flakes were put together by the father. So he's part of the... the business, the plan. He needs to step in and say, I know you guys have fun, and we always had that, but you're at a different level now. There's different responsibilities, the money, the power, the fame. We need to have a talk. You know, I think the parents, and certainly the father who's become a part of this, needs to be involved, needs to take his son, you know, just the slap on the back of the head. What the hell were you thinking?
Right.
Let's
I mean, he's definitely putting himself in
right.
harm's way. And forget about, you know, the arm is an issue, but even without the arm.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other issue, I mean, the girl he was making out with in the line for the wasn't even attractive.
Not good looking.
No boobs at all. Flat as a 12-year-old boy.
That's my favorite Andy line of the whole thing. He was really appalled that the woman was.
You're Rob Gronkowski. Get a hot girl with nice tatas and, you know, something going on for herself.
Yeah.
Although, for all I know, that was like the 12th girl he made out with on the night, and she was the only one who wasn't hot.
Which opens up another line of problems.
Was this at the same place?
You know.
I don't know.
Health concerns.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Oh, he's fine.
Oh, all the germs today. You don't just go planting on any girl you see these days. You end up with cold sores in December.
Like Paul.
Fred.
Yeah.
Really?
But, I mean that, that I have
old?
No
are
issue.
Are you that old? You're not that much older than me.
Yeah.
You don't remember when you were like.
You never made out with anybody?
I'm just saying, there's a lot more germs these days.
Oh, there isn't.
Oh,
sakes.
Yeah, there is.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, dirty. Dirty.
You have so many issues.
508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Web radio at Patriots.com.
Yeah, that, you know, the biggest problem with Rob Gronkowski is he might have gotten sick over the weekend.
Right.
Well, you know.
He's got to think.
Health is a big part of being an athlete. You got to keep healthy.
That's true.
He could do that wrestling move. He just needs to put one of those masks
right.
on.
You know, don't kiss a girl, but do a DDT with a broken arm.
Don't get any germs.
I know for a fact that, you know, during the season, the team goes to great lengths when guys get sick to isolate it and try to make sure it doesn't spread and teach these guys.
Yeah, but this isn't the season.
You know, but
that's where I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not like you are worn down from practicing all week and you have a game on Sunday and you need to do everything to – I mean, this is the off season. I'm okay with him having some fun, making out with girls all over the place, going to parties – but he crossed the line. He crossed the line with. I also didn't like how it was reported, by the way, showing some ignorance of wrestling. Some people called it a stone cold stunner. Some people called it a body slam.
Well, it also begs the question, you know, is he already looking at the WWE when he retires?
Oh, I made that assessment in the locker room this year that if he didn't work here, if he was anywhere else, he would be a part of wrestling. He would make an appearance at a WrestleMania, do a stone cold stunner or something, but they'll never allow him to.
So he make it to 50?
Alive or. Yeah. Playing.
No. Playing.
I don't know. This day and age, you can play for like 17, 18
All right, well,
years.
That has Andy and Eric very upset today. Paul, not so much.
I'm very happy with the Hernandez thing.
No, I'm upset.
He needs a bounce back year, and I think working with Brady is a great way to have a bounce back
Absolutely.
Year.
Now, I'm surprised he had to rent a place. He couldn't just stay in the castle.
Right. Maybe they wouldn't let him cross the moat.
Well, it's not done yet, is it?
Yeah,
well,
it's done.
I thought
done.
It was.
It is
done.
Yeah.
They That's moved right. in?
They wouldn't put the bridge down and let him come across the moat.
So, anyway, so... And I'm sure there'll be other guys out there because I remember last
it's not
year
Taylor Price.
There were a few guys out there with Brady working out.
Welker will go out there.
Yeah,
he was out there last year. I don't know if Lloyd will be. Who knows?
Well,
he should be. I'd like to see him rent the place next door.
So what else? What other Patriots?
Be like an off-season like reality
Will Brady
show.
Brady be there?
Well, I hope. He might be in Costa Rica. You're right.
So guys,
you never know where to find him in the off-season.
We're all standing there lining up.
One place you won't is the gym.
Tell me what you think about the Super Bowl. Were you surprised at the way it unfolded? Pretty much what you expected?
Yeah, I thought a blackout third quarter.
I was a little surprised. I thought it was going to be about 40 minutes. It was only 34, the blackout.
Right.
So.
No, I was surprised that Baltimore took it to them so early and got such a big lead.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I thought it was going to be closer the whole game.
San Francisco laid an egg. You know, we made fun of the Texans coming here. San Francisco did the exact same thing. They weren't ready to play. They had the wrong formation on that opening drive that wiped out a penalty. They had some. Kaepernick was turning the wrong way on fakes and stuff.
No, it didn't wipe. It wiped out a 25-yard game.
Wiped out a play.
Yeah.
So it's like you're reading an email. You can't just figure out what he meant.
They were not ready to go. You know, right on down to the safety that everybody knew was coming. And yes, he was being held. That's sort of irrelevant. But they were also caught off guard. They didn't look like they were prepared to get after the guy as quickly as possible. So you know, from start to finish, I thought the 49ers got outcoached. Harbaugh outcoached Harbaugh.
On that
fourth down play, that last punt, they only had one chance to win the game, and that was blocking the punt, and they didn't seem like they were going after it.
Yeah. There was something
right.
They just weren't ready. Maybe it was Brad Seeley. Maybe
Seeley
he had
didn't
a bad day.
I think
the moment got to them. I think the moment got to them from that first play. I think Kaepernick looked a little
He was off early
at first.
And he admitted that. Give him credit. He came out and said, I wasn't good enough.
I cost us the game.
Which is funny that, you know, he kind of was and wasn't.
Because I thought he was very good.
He's the reason they got back
in
the game, too.
That series at the end for the 49ers, when it really looked like, wow, my God, they could win this game. You know, that last play, it almost seemed to me like it was a play designed to get a penalty. It was almost like this is a play where if we throw the ball immediately at the snap, we know they're going to be holding us. And at minimum, we're going to get a holding call. And it was almost designed to get a penalty.
And in the regular season, it would.
Right. But
100% of the time.
But in the Super Bowl, to make your last play in the hands of the refs, I thought that was crazy.
I hope that wasn't the mindset, because that's even more so playing not. I mean, that's loser mentality.
Right.
I'm going to get a flag here.
We can't execute a play on our own. We need
a
penalty.
To Crabtree?
The last
three
plays went to Crabtree.
That's crazy.
Well, the other thing too, and nobody on San Francisco, none of their supporters are bringing this up. They're complaining about the Ravens committing a penalty on that on the fourth down. Michael Crabtree was just as guilty of offensive pass interference as the Ravens defender was. So it was a perfect non-call, I thought.
I thought
because you can't let it be decided by a referee.
I just liked the overall way the game was officiated. I wish regular season football was like that.
I do too.
I mean, they let him play.
Yeah,
there were no ticky-tack calls.
Nope.
I didn't think they allowed any egregious, really, oh, you gotta call that. You know, there were calls you could have made. You could have had a pass interference on the Torrey Smith deep ball relatively early in the game.
Yeah, I didn't think was pass interference.
But in the regular season, it is.
Probably.
I don't know.
I think everything. I mean, I've seen the Patriots
get
pass interferences for one-tenth of that contact.
Yeah. No, there has been. And the fourth down clearly would have been a penalty in the regular season. Now, maybe not on a fourth down on that play.
Right.
But you know, if that same play had happened on a third and goal in the middle of the second quarter, they might have thrown the flag.
Right.
I don't know even in the regular.
On who, though? Because I think Crabtree was just as bad.
I agree with you that Crabtree was hitting him, and I actually think Crabtree initiated the contact.
Yeah.
He hit Smith first, but that look from behind, Smith has both arms around Crabtree. And I think more often than not, that call's going to go against the defense. But I like the fact that it wasn't called. Just like there was two long drives the Ravens had for field goals in the second half that were really big. There was a third and goal from inside the two that Flacco took a quick snap, and he ended up not getting what he wanted right away, and he ended up giving a lot of ground and rolling out to his right. He got buried out of bounds.
Yeah.
But he just threw the ball away. I don't want to see a roughing the passer or a late hit out of bounds. Unnecessary. It was not – it didn't have anything to do with the play. It wasn't an egregiously bad hit. It was definitely out of bounds. He threw it and his momentum took him out of bounds, and the guy continued with the hit.
Right.
Too many roughing the passes on plays like that don't have really anything to do with the play. I thought that was a good no call, just like I thought it was a good no call on the fourth down, you know, on that last drive.
Yeah, I had no issue with those calls or non-calls, but I do have an issue with that play call. I mean, to have the very last play of the game, barring a penalty, this is going to be the last play that you have to win the Super Bowl. And to have it immediately just have your guy throw a little fade pass, I mean, you got a guy who can run. Give him some options on that play, depending on what he sees at the snap, to just throw it up and just put everything in.
I was very surprised Kaepernick wasn't given the ball more.
Well, evidently, he checked to that play, too.
Kaepernick did?
Kaepernick did.
But even before that.
But I thought that the fact that they didn't run read option. And listen, give Dean Pease. Eric brought up he was happy for Dean Pease. Give him credit. Little retribution for him. Coming up with really aggressive all-out blitzes down at three of the last four plays, and the one that they didn't go, he overruled John Harbaugh. I don't know if you guys read any of that stuff from Peter King. It was pretty good yesterday. He overruled on second down, I believe.
I don't read
Harbaugh that. Wanted another all-out blitz, and Pease had already called whatever the base defense, you know, zone coverage was. And had they been in an all-out blitz and the same play kind of unfolded, they might have been in trouble. And then they went back with the pressure. They took away. I thought they did a good job, better job than I've seen any of these defenses do of taking away the quarterback on the zone reads. I thought they hit the quarterback a lot when he didn't have the ball.
Just popping him every time.
Right. Courtney Upshaw had a really
strong game. I think that's
really
the only way you can defend that is to hit him and hit him and hit him again.
And the quarterback didn't have the ball but they made sure that he handed the ball off. And really, I thought their run defense was superb until Nada got hurt.
Right.
And that's when Gore got loose for a couple of long runs, you know, when Nada was out of the game. I thought that was a big difference. But I agree with you guys all around. To me, the fade on a fourth down play like that, the fade is for two things. One, it's an immobile quarterback, a big, strong guy who can't move, like Flacco, maybe. And you have a tall, physical receiver like Anquan Boldin. Well, in Kaepernick, you can all out blitz him, and he can avoid it. You know, if he doesn't get a read quick enough to throw the ball, he's mobile enough that he might be able to make a play. You don't have to get the ball out of his hands immediately.
Right.
And they don't have, I mean, Randy Moss, if they threw it to him, Crabtree to me is not necessarily a guy that I think of to go up and make a play. Mm. I think he's a terrific receiver,
right.
Crabtree, but he's not a guy that I think of like Boldin that's just going to go out and muscle a couple of guys. And I thought, very interesting, guys, and when you watch games nowadays on an incomplete pass, do you ever see the receiver not turn to the referee or look for a flag?
Right. Yeah.
Crabtree didn't. He put his head down. He never even looked at the ref.
My guess is he knew the situation, the way the game had. I'm not getting that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you automatically start complaining? As a diva receiver?
Yeah, most of the time.
When's the last time you saw a receiver not complain?
He left that to Harbaugh.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the right thing there is to take your medicine. It was.
He really did. You know what? The stereotypes that are out there about the two Harbaughs, I thought, came through in flying colors. Like, John is the personable guy, and Jim is the intense, you know, hard ass.
Don't tell that to that VP that was talking to John at halftime.
I know, but
undressed him.
Did you see, like, the end of the game, John said, "I love you," and he said, and he was like, you know, congratulations. He said, that's, you know, he didn't say anything really back, Jim. Like,
it was like that date where the guy says, "I love you." Yeah. Just respond with, yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I get the impression, like, and I saw John had some great quotes about how, what Andy and I were talking about last week, it's never going to be as great as it should have been for the winner. And I think John is already feeling that. He said, he had a quote saying, "I'm absolutely devastated for my brother." I don't think it would be like that the other way around.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I think Jim would be
saying
ecstatic.
Jim's an a-hole.
Well, how did you?
I'm not going that far.
Well, I am. If he doesn't feel the same about his brother as his brother would for him, and if it's not an equal playing field, then he's an a-hole.
You know what I kind of think? I think John's always been in the shadow of the more successful guys. Jim Harbaugh was, you know,
which is odd for a younger brother.
We can look at Jim Harbaugh as, you know, sort of an average run of the mill NFL quarterback.
But in first round pick that went to Michigan.
But in terms of the rest of the league, the rest of the world, that's an elite athlete. You know what I'm saying? So he's always been the guy who's had his ass kissed at every step of the way, and John was just, you know, another guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, Cooper Manning. He was just another guy, you know? And I think that this was an opportunity that John had to finally sort of outdo his brother, and I don't think Jim handled
brother,
it very well.
Yeah.
That's because Jim's not used to handling it. John is.
That's my point.
But Jim's an a-hole. You're describing an a-hole, though.
I know, but I don't want to go that far because I don't really know him personally.
I've heard stories, though, about him.
I'll tell you, he did the same thing that Belichick did. He did the same classless thing that Belichick did after the game and didn't talk, which I hate. I hate it. I mean, I don't understand. It's not that hard, as I said, to be a human being.
Well, I think it is for some people.
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
I guess his comportment, you know, I guess he was blaming the refs after.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, God.
I didn't see. I turned it off. Right
and here's the other thing.
And I wouldn't bring it up if I didn't think it was obvious or whatever he said.
Here's the other thing they're overlooking on that play, on that fourth down play. Uncatchable pass is still part of the rules, is it not?
Yeah, it was pretty, yeah.
That ball was not catchable.
Yeah. I think the ball was catchable.
If you jump, you're probably going to land out of bounds.
Yeah, I think the ball landed on the sideline, on the white sideline, and I've seen many times guys hanging on over the sideline and catching the ball.
I don't know. I just think, I agree. I think it should have been a non-call.
But I don't necessarily think it should have been holding, by the way, because the throw was made immediately. So if it's anything, it's pass interference and the ball's in the
holding
air.
Holding with the ball in the air is pass interference.
Because everybody likes to say, like, oh, holding, it doesn't matter if the ball's catchable. Well, I don't think it was holding. Yeah. I think it was pass interference. The ball was in the air immediately.
Harbaugh was calling for holding.
I was like, really? That's what you're going
for? Well, they had another bad one to the other side, to Moss, a few plays earlier.
The two-point conversion.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
When Moss didn't even...
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
and he did another one of his just arms down.
Right. And not that I'm going to... this is not that big of a deal, but I thought Phil Simms had an absolutely awful game.
Oh, everybody did. Everybody ripped
it. The two-point conversion, he says, he's got no choice. He's got to throw it away. Really?
Yeah.
A two-point conversion where you can't allow points, you have to just throw it away?
Right.
You have to keep that play alive as long as you can.
Run around. Who cares if you get tackled? Right.
He just, like, saw Ed Reed coming and he just threw it.
Right.
That's not a good play.
Right. That's like if you don't want to get knocked out of field goal position, I mean, he didn't throw it away.
He didn't think they should have taken the safety, which to me was elementary a football play as you could get.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nance had it right away.
Apparently Jim agreed with him.
Right. Let's go to some phone
Brad
calls.
Seeley.
Son of a bitch, they're going for a safety.
You know, it's funny, Jim Harbaugh took a safety from like the 20-yard line against Seattle earlier in the year that cost him the spread. Remember that? In a situation where you probably shouldn't have taken one.
Chris with the TINs on the line. Hey, Christian.
Hey, guys. Great discussion as usual.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to agree with Andy about the ref officiating. I really wish they call all the games like that. Just let them play. And I think it's really crappy that they call the game one way during the regular season, and then when it comes to the playoffs, you can see a marked difference in the way that they call games.
See, I
the only
with
problem
them.
With that is the way your Patriots are built right now.
I know.
You play with Lloyd, you play with Welker, because this is the new age Belichick. And there's a part of me that thinks he's saying, son of a bitch, I should have kept playing it the way I always played it back in the days when we were beating up the Colts.
If Welker and Lloyd would get banged around in Hernandez.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really do think they should just be consistent.
But they won't. They do this every year, and then we everybody loves it, and then
and
the next year
like
you see soft calls.
Too. It's not just the NFL.
Sure,
every sport,
yeah,
you get to the playoffs,
and
they allow more stuff.
But it's just more noticeable in football because there are so many physical calls that can be made.
To me, it's always the specific calls, the passing calls, the passing game calls that, to me, like Andy said, how many do we see even for the Patriots this year where you're like, the one on Welker against Houston, the Monday night game.
Right.
My God, Fred even choked. It was so bad.
Yeah. But everybody says it's for scoring in fantasy. Well, they scored. I mean,
so they don't have any more fantasy football on the line in the
playoffs? No, but I'm
is
just saying
why?
Everybody says they do it in the regular season to promote scoring
and
fantasy.
You know what else
numbers.
Everyone says, Andy?
In the Super Bowl, you had plenty of scoring.
Right? Defense wins championships, right, Andy?
Yep.
34-31.
And I wanted to chime in on your whole thing about Gronk.
Yep.
And we all love Gronk, no question about it. But, yeah. You know, after seeing that video, somebody definitely needs, I don't know if it's the father or it needs to pull him aside and say, listen, you're young, you're supposed to have fun, but it is different.
You just have to be smart.
Right.
This organization now
has
invested almost $60 million in you, and you're an investment, and you have a responsibility to your employer.
Right.
It's not necessary to lose your mind.
And
no.
He should, I mean, shouldn't
you
it
got
be
a
inherent?
Responsibility.
Shouldn't there be something in him saying, yeah, I got to treat this
I got to stop
different.
This stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, don't most people have that? And that doesn't that worry you that he doesn't?
See, that's why this one bothers me so much more than last year. Because you would think after everything he went through last summer, right, wrong, or indifferent, the summer of Gronk was analyzed and criticized.
Right.
And now the first chance that he gets in the next offseason, he takes it, to me, a step further with the broken arm.
Right, no question.
Now, can I ask you this? If his arm wasn't broken, would people still make a big deal about it?
Yes, but not as
not
bad.
Not as big.
But doing the kick and the DDT is crosses one line, and then doing it with a broken arm crosses the next
line. The other line.
Yeah.
But to me, it's still behavior that I don't want. Whether I'm Mr. Kraft or Bill Belichick. Or his teammates. It's not necessarily something I want to see.
Even
if he doesn't have a broken arm. Just the broken arm, like Eric said earlier, it just makes it so much worse.
No question about it. Andy, didn't you want to ask me something last week?
How's your mother? Your girlfriend.
What about her?
Phenomenal. Does she float on her own?
At the time she did, yeah.
Good Lord.
What, you have them removed? What do you mean? They don't
float
anymore?
Do you still know her? What kind of relationship was that? Was that a long-term relationship?
No, not at all. It was like
did you pay her?
It was like a five-month thing. I did pay her, yes. It was. I actually met her while I was on a bachelor party in Vegas.
No surprise there.
Yeah, she ended up, she was a dancer at the club that I went to that night, and my friend ended up hooking up with her friend, and that's how I sort of met her.
Wow.
Andy, nice. Seriously.
And,
do we ever miss these? Andy and I had this nailed.
Yeah, no. According to Facebook, you guys pretty much
but I was impressed. That's nice.
Okay.
I was happy I had hair and I was in shape. Now I'm miserable and,
you did have a lot of hair, my friend.
Yeah, you went down the Paul Perillo road.
You and I have traveled the same path away from Dr. Robert Leonard.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened. It was like 2 years and it all just fell off.
It hurts, huh?
Oh, well.
All right, Christian.
See you, Christian.
All right.
He's my favorite caller.
Speaking of Vegas, let's go to Jeff.
He's
hey, Jeff.
In the armored vehicle. Is that really?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
I think Harbaugh was in one of those, too, wasn't he?
So did you see Gronk? Were you at the club with Gronk?
Yeah, I was at RX with some of the Eye Candy Girls Sunday night, and we were partying with, well, I was about to body slam Kronk, but I couldn't quite get him up over my shoulders. No, RX is way too ritzy, even for Jeff and Vic.
That's a ritzy place?
Yeah, it's at the Wynn, I believe.
Oh,
that's
my
the best
God.
Big, to be at that Super Bowl party at the Wynn, wow. that's a big-time venue.
It's a big ticket.
Yeah.
So that makes it even worse. It was like a fancy place, and he's like got no shirt on, and he's body slamming his brother.
Well, I'm okay with that.
Sorry, DDTing
okay
his brother.
With roughing up a fancy place. That's no problem. But
yeah. Fred, you have no problem with any of it.
Probably because it was the Super Bowl day or night. That's totally why it was that rowdy for that location. A couple things on the game. Why couldn't Kaepernick have sort of altered the snap count a little bit? It looked like they were really getting a jump off the line of scrimmage on him.
They certainly were.
Yeah, that's another part of what I think Andy's talking about, how they just didn't seem like they were ready. They laid an egg. How many plays did they snap with one or no seconds on the play call?
Right.
Yeah. It seemed like they did that all night.
Yeah.
Yeah, another thing too related to the Patriots. When's the last time the Patriots in an elimination game stopped an opposing offense on first and goal? Like usually it's just a foregone conclusion that they're going to score the touchdown. And going back to the Willie McGinnis regular season opener where they stopped the Colts after that, I mean the Colts score, the Giants score, everyone just comes down and it seems like they scored the touchdown on the Patriots at the end.
Well, you had playmakers back then. I mean, because you can go with at least two McGinnis games where they stopped the Colts on the goal line. And I know the one you're talking about, they forced him back for a longer field goal. The one, obviously, in Indy on the goal line, that goal line. You had playmakers, and that's what I've been talking about. Just that ability. I always thought McGinnis was a bust overall because I don't think he was great. He should have been greater than he was, but he was a playmaker. He would come up with big plays when they needed big plays in the moment. And that's what this team lacks on way too many positions.
Well, I'm saying I think you have to give the
don't roll your eyes at me
for stopping them. You got to give Baltimore credit for making that stop. I mean, as bad as San Francisco was with their offensive execution at the end there.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the Ravens aren't great, are they, on defense? And they don't, I mean, no.
By today's standards, they're one of the better, but they're not great.
Well, but they're not even really one of the better. They gave up more points than the Patriots. They're not better.
The red zone is pretty good.
Their red zone was very good.
Yeah.
But that's why. You have playmakers.
Right.
That red zone is about making plays at the right time. And maybe that's Reed, and maybe that's not whatever. You make some plays. They still have some guys that win.
But the big change for Baltimore.
I get what you're saying. I think they need more consistent playmakers. Because if you win 12 games and you have to make plays to win games.
Against crappy teams.
So unless you win the Super Bowl, then obviously you didn't
make
enough plays.
To me, playmakers make plays when it matter. Okay. Not against the Bills in the fourth quarter when you're blowing out a team.
So you didn't agree with Andy's
commentary. I agree that they need more consistent playmakers, but I think they have guys who made plays throughout the season
but
and in the playoffs.
There's 10 sack guys and guys who get 10 sacks. There's guys who make plays against the Bills, and there are playmakers. There's a difference.
Unless, by that definition, unless you're the team that actually wins the Super Bowl,
no.
You didn't have enough guys.
Not
that
at
made,
all.
Because at the end, you didn't make the play you had to.
No.
Not at all.
That's unfair.
Well, I'm not saying.
I think it's unfair to say the Patriots don't have playmakers.
I think they have very few playmakers.
They don't have enough playmakers. But you can lose a playoff game and have enough playmakers. You just get beat by a team that played better than you.
And I think that happens sometimes.
It didn't happen in the Patriots this year.
But they didn't make a plays.
If you look at that Baltimore game, they didn't play well. You know, and it wasn't like, oh, the guys that usually make plays didn't make plays. They just didn't play well. You know,
Not playing well, making plays. I don't know where we're kind of
like the Houston Texans. See, I think the Houston Texans are very similar. I think that the Houston Texans offensively basically have Arian Foster as a guy who can make a play for you. Andre Johnson in this day and age, you know, now he's not really in the position where he's going to make a lot of dynamic plays. Owen Daniels, run of the mill guy who catches passes nowadays as a tight end. Matt Schaub, certainly not going to make you wow you by fitting one into tight coverage the way Flacco did and the way Kaepernick did in the Super Bowl. Those are plays. I think the Houston Texans are a very good football team, but they don't have a lot of dynamic playmakers on offense. On defense, they have some with Watt, but obviously not enough to control. And if you have, you know, just a handful, like Andy said, the Patriots don't have... They don't have zero playmakers. They have some, but they don't have enough.
Well, I think that in order to have the sustained success that the Patriots have had, you have to have playmakers. You can't do it without playmakers. You can't do what they've done without playmakers.
Okay, but the point that he's trying to make, and I what's the playoff record now going back to 05 is 7-7, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can have a playmaker because you're better than Miami and you're better than Buffalo and you're better than Cleveland. But what happens when the other team has talent that's equal or better to yours? Do you have playmakers? In the early part of the decade, we did. We weren't just better than every team we beat in the playoffs in 01, 3, and 4. Sometimes we made plays when it counted.
I think on defense, that's the case. That is definitely the case. On offense, I would argue that the offense is as good as it's ever been. I don't think, you know, that's not an issue. But I think on defense.
Well, it depends how you're judging it. I don't know what you're judging it on.
Yeah. And I'm making plays, it's not.
I'll take the one that used to make plays.
I can go chapter and verse to these
playoff
games.
I'll take Troy Brown. I'll take David Givens. I'll take Deion Branch.
And I
making
agree
plays.
With you more. Those teams scored 41 points against the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh in the 04 AFC Championship game. This team scores 13 at home. So I don't think this offense is as good as it's ever been.
No. That's my
point. This offense scores as many points as it ever has in the regular season, but not against quality teams when it counts.
David Givens was probably not as physically gifted as Brandon Lloyd, and he probably has never put up the numbers that Brandon Lloyd has put up. But if you say, give me David Givens or give me Brandon Lloyd to make a play, I'll take Givens every time.
Yeah, do you remember that argument
plays.
We had,
just
Andy,
plays.
You know, about the
and
04?
Sometimes in games where, you know, four catches, 60 yards, but you say, you know what? All four of those were big catches.
I can remember each one of them.
And instead, Brandon Lloyd is going to catch you maybe 7 for 90 or whatever
he does.
Torrey
Smith was a
I'll
little like
Givens.
That, Andy. Torrey Smith was a little like that, I think, in the last two games. He only had two catches in the Super Bowl. They were both huge.
Right.
He had four catches against us in the championship. They all were big plays. I remember them. Brandon Lloyd caught 7 passes. I remember 2 of them. Right. I remember him falling down on a big third down.
So you don't buy this whole playmaker's premise that is something
no,
that
on,
exists.
On defense, I do. I think on defense, they need to get guys that – I don't know if it's playmaking or brains.
I think they need better players
like
on defense.
When you have Rodgers –
See, I think that's the big difference. The defense still lacks some talent in some areas. Offensively, you can argue there's talent because you don't put up the numbers they put up without talent, but are there playmakers? And that's a differentiation for me.
I think Gronk's a playmaker. I think Welker's a playmaker, even though he had – 2 catches in the last 2 years that we all remember, but I
think Welker was the only guy who made plays on the field for him in this game.
And Gronk wasn't there, but I think Gronk's a playmaker, and I do think Hernandez is a playmaker. I know you're really down on him because he's had. You also have to take into consideration all the catches he's had in key moments.
No, I don't. Brandon Lloyd had a ton of catches. I'm differentiating between cheap
production.
I know. I'm just talking about production. And if you
Brandon
use
Lloyd
your
and
argument,
Aaron Hernandez were very similar against Baltimore. They both caught a lot of passes, but both didn't really make any impactful plays. Against Baltimore, I'm talking about, this past season, this past playoffs. Do you remember the argument we had about the 2004 offense, Andy, that time? And I got stubborn. I was saying they were as high-powered as these. They didn't score enough as many points. But remember I was talking about all the blowouts? And I took it a step too far. I was being hyperbolic by saying they were as high-powered. I don't care if they score only 450 points instead of 550 points. What I care is when they need to move the ball and they need to score against good teams, do they do it? And I always, when that team got the ball in a 4-point lead, the game was over. I knew the game was over. And it didn't have to be just clock killing Corey Dillon. It could have been whatever way you wanted it to be. Like you said, that's when David Givens would make 3 catches. He'd finish with 4 for the game. But 3 of them would come on the final drive to put the game away, or Troy Brown, or whoever it was. And like I said, they had the situation at Pittsburgh with their quarterback with the flu, and they're putting 41 on the board against the number one defense against a 15-1 team. Now they have this old, tired defense for Baltimore to go against, and they couldn't move the ball. They couldn't score points.
Well,
13 points.
They moved the ball when the game was over.
They were in the red zone 4 times. In the last 3 possessions of the game, they went to the red zone.
Inside the 25 6 times, right?
Okay, well, and they were in the red zone 4 times.
They're inside the 25
and they scored
6
once.
And you know, so Baltimore has a good red zone, but I think not having Gronkowski obviously hurt them in their red zone. I mean, that was the one thing. We had red zone problems a few years ago. Then all of a sudden we went to this tight end, and those red zone problems got corrected.
They got better, yeah.
So we went back to that in this game. But, you know, I understand what you're saying about they need these guys making plays. There's no doubt about it. you know, but I don't know. I like we said about that Baltimore game, I also blame coaching. I don't think it was just the players. I think all of a sudden, you know, you stop doing things that you usually do, you know, about as far as being aggressive, time management. You know, there were a lot of things that came into play in that game that, you know, beyond not having enough talent.
And I'll also say, you know, the whole playmaker thing, I'm not – you can make fun of me, but I'm not giving the quarterback a pass on that. I don't think he's made as many plays in this last stretch of
playoff
games.
It's hard for a quarterback to make plays when he's not surrounded by playmakers.
Yeah, I understand that, but sometimes you're supposed to be the best of all time, and
I know.
You make a play.
And when I hit Aaron Hernandez crossing in the hands right in the little triangle, and it goes through the triangle – you know, Jermaine Wiggins was not a quarter of the man Aaron Hernandez was, but he caught that ball.
No, I
agree. Troy Brown would catch the
ball. I'm not putting it all on him, but I'm saying, and you know, just as one off the top of my head, when it was a tie game in San Diego in 06 in a divisional playoff game against a superior opponent, it was 3rd and 10 from their own 20. He threw a bomb to Rishay Caldwell.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just make sure that the guy doesn't drop it. I mean, you make a play.
And he tried all year to make sure that Brandon Lloyd wouldn't drop it, except he dropped it.
But he missed a lot of throws the other day.
I agree. But I think a big part of the quarterback position, and we overvalue it in wins and losses, is my husband cannot throw the ball and catch it too. You know, there's an aspect to that. Is that better? Was that closer to
Brazilian? I want to know why that accent changes every time.
Because I'm still trying to fine-tune my Giselle accent. But I really believe that. And Fred, your argument, the coaching. Well, you know what? If you don't necessarily know that you have the playmakers to make the plays, sometimes that creeps into coaching and changes the way you coach into how you're doing things. So I think there's a lot there. You know, I don't know that 4th and 2, he throws it to Shane Vereen. He throws it to Kevin Falk, right? I mean, there's something to be said for the playmakers and the confidence they bring the quarterback and the coach.
But, and that's a good example. You know, Shane Vereen, David Givens, for example, was not a great receiver.
No.
But, you know, he had that mentality that, you know, whatever it is, he didn't have a case of nerves. You know, he didn't let the moment get to him, and Brady had the confidence to throw it to him. Do we know that about Shane Vereen yet? We don't.
No.
We got to find out. You got to take that chance and give the guy the ball. You know, you're never going to know unless
you do
it.
So who has to take that chance?
Brady and Belichick.
Oh. Brady's the one who's
or Josh McDaniels, whoever's calling the play.
Well, but it's also a little bit different with the running back situation. And I mean, Givens and Branch were the receivers on this team in the era we're talking about. Those were the receivers, right?
And Troy Brown.
Yeah. But Givens and Branch. And this year it's Welker and Lloyd. You know, so he tried to go down that road with Lloyd. He tried his best.
You know my feelings about Lloyd.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, Shane Vereen didn't play all year. And had one good game in the postseason, a breakout game, but he's still sort of in the shadow of Danny Woodhead. That's still sort of Danny Woodhead's role.
I know, but he was available in that game. Danny Woodhead had a broken thumb or whatever.
But Woodhead played.
I know, but I'm,
so
I'm just saying.
You saw Shane Vereen when they had to use him. He had three touchdowns.
They didn't throw the ball once to Woodhead. You know, so
and that's because he couldn't use that one
thumb.
Exactly,
that's what I'm saying as far as availability. So Shane Vereen is an able body, we think.
So now it's Shane Vereen's fault that they didn't win.
No.
Because
no.
You continue
it's
to
the
just
opposite.
Blame these bit
the
role players
no, you're
for
not
why.
Listening to me.
I am.
The blame comes down on Brady
or
Josh McDaniels for that, where you got to use this guy. You know, because if you had the same mentality with David Givens, who I think falls into the same bucket,
I don't.
You would never have known he could have made the play.
But you developed that over the course of a
maybe
year.
Maybe someday
and year
Shane
and
Vereen's going to be David Givens, but he hasn't had anywhere approaching.
And he'll never get there unless they start using him.
But you don't do that in the AFC title game. You do that in week one like you did with David Givens to build him into the postseason
In the
factor.
AFC title game this year, what was the alternative?
Wes Welker,
Lloyd, Aaron Hernandez, Brandon Lloyd, all your proven playmakers.
Okay, so
yes,
Lloyd,
those are the guys you had proven as your playmakers all year long. When you throw a guy the ball 150 times, you've decided that's one of my key cogs.
Are you advocating that it should be Vereen over Lloyd?
I think you got to get him in the mix.
No, are you advocating that it should be Vereen as an option over Lloyd?
In the passing game, no. I think that position, Lloyd has to be there. But I think that
how many times was Vereen on the field and they chose not to throw it to him when he was wide open because they didn't trust him?
Well, that's the point. You got.
I don't remember saying
I mean, you got to mix it up.
Add him to the list of bad drops in that game. By the way, he had a bad drop on the sideline.
You know, you got to mix it up, and I really think that you know, this need to go to Lloyd 150 times, you know, just because he's Brandon Lloyd. I think that was a mistake.
No, I think the investment was trying to put the money in the bank to withdraw it later. It just never got to where it was supposed to go, right?
Yeah, but we saw that. We knew before the AFC title game that, yeah, I mean.
No, I know, but you had already invested it. You didn't have anything else to turn to. You had Deion Branch a little bit, and he was open, and Brady missed him. You know, you had Gronk on the sideline, so you're already down. If you remove Lloyd by choice as a keep, and you've removed Gronk, well, now you're down two of your four. The four guys you deemed you're going to be, these are my four guys I'm riding.
I know, but we're always
you're shooting two of the horses out back.
We're always told if you're out there, we have confidence in you. And I think, you know, Vereen's an example of a guy that, you know, with what you just said, you got to give it, you know, you got
to. Do you think when he throws, to, when Tom Brady, and he says that. I don't know that he means that, but he says when you're out there, I have total confidence in you.
Right.
Do you think when he releases the ball towards Brandon Lloyd, he feels the same as he does towards Rob Gronkowski?
He shouldn't.
Right, and he doesn't. He's a human being.
Right.
So they say things, and we just sort of laugh them off and listen to them, but we know they're not true.
Well, I don't know. I think in that game, you know, you got to mix it up a little bit, and I think that, you know, we've talked about it with Brady. Is he too hard on these guys? Does he demand too much on these guys to be too precise?
What do they have to mix up a little? Like what specifically?
I'm just talking about that particular game.
Yeah, what are we talking about?
I'm not depending on just...
Because you just got finished chastising me, telling me how many times they got inside the 25-yard line.
Wes Welker drops the ball, and we can't win if he drops the ball.
No.
And if that's the case, then we're depending too much on Wes Welker.
Wait, do you think that Bill Belichick thinks they lost the game because Wes Welker dropped the ball on third down?
No, everybody else does.
But that's two totally, entirely different things.
Well, who
you don't think that, right?
I mean, so, but Andy's thinking...
Do you think they lost the game because
of Welker?
No, absolutely
not. No. So, but Andy's thinking they don't have enough playmakers. Well, we don't know if Shane Vereen's a playmaker. And we never will unless they start trying.
Well, maybe they try in practice and...
That could be.
That's why he has such a limited role.
And we know they've tried. It just... Sorry, I'm full.
You know?
No, to say that we'll never know about Shane Vereen... First of all, you're making Shane Vereen out to be a little bit...
I mean, David Givens got...
Shane Vereen is a third down back. I mean, let's not overstate the importance of the role in general.
Kevin Falk made plays. Falk was a playmaker.
I just was going to say, he could be a good part of the offense. Absolutely. I think that I like Shane Vereen a lot, and we've sort of been very positive, very pro-Shane Vereen around here for a while. But I don't think that's the difference between winning and losing. I don't think Kevin Falk, a lot of times, he made some big plays. I don't think Kevin Falk is the difference between winning and losing a game. And it also was kind of a different offense. As Andy kind of pointed out, with all the different receivers that they have now as compared to then, there's, you know, Kevin Falk was like three or four. You know, that third down back is more like five or six now, you know, with the tight ends that we didn't have. It was Dan Graham and Ben Watson. Those guys weren't Gronk and Hernandez.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about mixing it up. I think that they're able to move the ball consistently. It's someone needs to make a play when you get time to score. And in the playoffs, they haven't been able to score as much as they did. Other teams are scoring more than they did in the playoffs. So it's not just playoff football against good defenses. The Ravens offense was better in the playoffs than it was in the regular season from a production standpoint. And, I mean, that's pretty hard to ignore.
You know, like, let's look at Joe Flacco. He's not as good as Tom Brady. He doesn't have the talent of Tom Brady. He doesn't have the numbers of Tom Brady. But he's a playmaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to say now that Joe Flacco's a playmaker?
Sure.
Okay, so there's a difference between stats, production, regular season, numbers, wins, and all that.
But you're not saying that Brady isn't a playmaker, are you?
No, that's Paul.
Oh.
In the playoffs, yes.
You could have said that about Joe Flacco before the Super Bowl, though, too, that he was a playmaker.
Oh, God, yeah. I think he's the ultimate of that. Now, he needs to find the consistency, and, you know, that takes you to that next level. But, I mean, there are guys who make plays. I think it's indisputable. Now, you apparently don't. Like, Robert Horry made plays. He's, you know, the notorious bomber for NBA title teams. Big threes. I mean, there are guys that make plays that aren't as good all the time. They're not great. They're not, you know, going to give you 16 games of MVP stats or league-leading this or any of that crap. But they're playmakers.
And I think this team needs more of those on both sides of the football. Trouble is, on defense, you can get them. You might not find them, but the spots for them exist. Offense is a little different. Your best receiver, Wes Welker, is limited in the playmaking he can do
right.
because of his role. Because I think he showed up. I still say he was, if I had to pick a star of the game for the, it would be Wes Welker. And that flies in the face of everybody who thinks he lost the season
right.
for them
no,
with a drop.
Yeah.
But I think he showed up, he got up, he was physical, his punt returns. Welker, I have no problem. He made a mistake. He dropped a ball. It happens. Physical mistake. I don't know where I was going.
But there wasn't enough Wes Welkers in the game.
Right.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, that's where I was going. On offense, you've committed to Gronkowski, who's a playmaker, but has been injured when you need him to make the most plays the last 2 years. With the season on the line, he hasn't been able to make plays for you. I'm not calling, not faulting him for that necessarily. I'm just saying.
It's just what it is.
He's your elite playmaker, and he hasn't been available. And your next guy is limited because, well, and then Hernandez, to me, is not a playmaker. He has not proven himself a crunch time, big game, playmaker, moneymaker. That needs to improve, and maybe this little trip to the West Coast with Brady all offseason will help him do whatever, take a next step. Lloyd is not a playmaker. Ridley, not a playmaker. Maybe Vereen can be a playmaker. I saw flashes of playmaker from Shane Vereen this year. He made plays against Houston. That 83-yard touchdown in the regular season, that's a play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he has hopes of being a playmaker. Danny Woodhead has shown at times to kind of be a play. Julian Edelman, to me, is a playmaker.
I think Julian Edelman.
That playmaking it. This gene I'm talking about, this little DNA
Julian
thing.
Julian Edelman, to me,
Edelman
is an
has
example
it.
Of that.
So you need to weave those into the, it's okay to have some guys that are your regular season cogs, your consistency, your balance, but you need playmakers to win championships, in my mind. That, to me, is the overwhelming factor. Not offense, not defense, not this, not that. Make a play. That's how you win titles, by making plays. Playmakers make plays.
Yep.
And they need those on both sides of the ball.
Yep. Well,
Our kicker. I wrote about this in PFW. Our subscribers will get it this week. But Adam Vinatieri, to me, was a playmaker as a kicker. For whatever you can be.
No doubt.
I'm not sure Steven Gostkowski is a playmaker as a kicker.
We don't know.
Right. So, this is all areas. This is every role you could possibly have on a football team. To me, you can be a playmaker. Long snapper, making sure your snaps when it's crunch time
and
are always
perfect.
And I'm
just saying that we didn't know Adam Vinatieri was a playmaker until he had the chance to be one.
Right.
So we, when you get a guy.
That came in his rookie year.
But I know Aaron Hernandez didn't take over the postseason like there was an opportunity to do so with Gronk down. So for this year, he was not good enough a playmaker.
You're right.
Last Super Bowl, he was not a good enough playmaker.
But I don't think he's that as far away. I think you think he can't be one, and he's far away.
I know you guys around here are big on year four jump, maybe year five jump.
Who are we talking about now?
Hernandez.
You know when great players are great? Pretty close to right away.
I think he plays his worst in big games.
Right.
That's the thing that worries me.
But Fred's not worried. By the year five, Paul, he'll be a playmaker.
But don't just – I don't know.
This was a good argument, by the way. Unprecedented, I think.
Do you think the Patriots
threw a lunch? We all ate while still arguing.
Do you think, at times, burping as we spoke? Do you think there's something to
be
said about with Gronk out?
Turn the mic off when that happens.
The Patriots became a little bit easier to defend.
God, yes.
And
a little,
of course.
I just told you. I think he's their best playmaker, the most irreplaceable football player in the NFL.
Because I think that when you do things like, let's just bring it full circle, like the fourth down play for the Niners, if that's Gronkowski. He's not, getting involved in a shoving match and letting the ball keep going. He might have caught that ball anyway. The guy might have been able to grab him the way Jimmy Smith did, but he would have still been around the football. Hell, the play that he rebroke his arm on, he caught the ball out of bounds.
Right.
He still caught it. That's what Andy's talking about. I don't care what you do. I have a guy that I know is going to make the play. Do they have enough of those guys? That's what Andy's point is.
And you say yes,
and
I
Gronkowski
say
no. Is one of those guys.
I think that if you simply upgraded the Brandon Lloyd position, I think you'd be in real good shape.
Assuming you keep Welker, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Offensively.
Offensively. Yeah.
But what
about, that's a key part of it.
Now, what defense, about the rest of the team?
Now, defense is a whole different story. That, to me, a lot of that comes down to brains as well. Because I think, a guy like Ty Law and Willie McGinnis and Rodney, they were also really smart football players.
Oh, I think playmaking takes smarts.
Yeah.
Like Ed Reed is not the most physically gifted safety to ever play.
Right.
Randy Moss is the most physically gifted receiver, but everybody who talks says he's a very smart football player. I mean, playmaking takes smarts. It's knowing everything about that's going on, everything. Yeah. So it's not just physical. Playmaking is mental. Because I don't think Troy Brown was the most physically gifted guy.
Nope.
And that guy made plays in all three phases of the game.
He was just a smart football player.
You know, he made plays all over the field. You know, Kevin Faulk was still making plays when some of us believed his skills were diminishing.
Oh,
he was still making a ton of plays.
7 years later.
So, yeah, there's a physical aspect to it, but there's a mental. Don't tell me Brandon Lloyd is incapable of making plays. There's something missing there.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, the playmaking gene. I'm just going to call it the playmaking gene. There's a playmaking gene. Some people have it. Some people don't. This team doesn't have enough of the people that have it.
Well, you look at Flacco during that game, and he was just remarkably calm. He was just...
That's how he always is.
Yeah. He didn't get rattled at all.
But there are playmakers who get jacked up, too, who are overly emotional.
No, I know, but when...
Ray Lewis was a playmaker for that team for a long... Not anymore, but he was very emotional. So there's no key other than you have the playmaking gene, right?
Yeah.
I just get back to Branch and Givens. To me, they were playmakers at receivers because neither was all that good. Neither was dominant. Neither was Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson.
And you even continue.
But it's not a mistake that you have seven straight games with a touchdown or back-to-back Super Bowls with, 11 catches.
Well, Branch, you could even see it last year. Not this past year, 2011. He only caught 50-whatever passes, but so many of them were important.
Place.
Now, this year, he was an afterthought. But even as recently as last year, I thought he made more big plays than Brandon Lloyd did this year.
Oh, God, yeah. So how do we find playmakers? How do you find that gene? Because there's plenty of playmakers that weren't necessarily playmakers in college.
And I think they're going to need, we talk about the year two jump that Indy makes fun of everybody about. I think guys like Hightower and Jones are really going to need to, because I think they have the physical attributes to be playmakers on defense. They have size, speed, and athleticism. Now, do they
have,
as you said, do they have the smarts? Do they have the durability? Do they have the toughness to do it when it matters most? Are they going to continue to slow down toward the end of the year in year two like they did in year one? I hope not. But I think those guys have a chance to be playmaking-type defenders, and I think they're going to need that. You don't need 11 playmakers on defense, but you need a couple, and I'm not sure they really have. I think you can make an argument that the biggest playmaker on defense is Vince. And, I'm sorry, but interior defensive linemen don't impact games with plays, individual plays, all that often. But I think, could you make an argument who a bigger playmaker is on defense than Vince?
Oh, I think Vince is in there. I think Ninkovich is a playmaker.
Ninkovich has to be in there.
But Nick, like you brought up, this 10-sack guy. I think Ninkovich had a terrific season. I'm a huge fan. And I don't worry about Rob Ninkovich. I think at this point he's established himself as a starter. But, when it's 3rd and 10, and you look at the other team, and you're watching a game, and you're like, come on, Aldon Smith, it's time for you to step up. Or Terrell Suggs, not this year when he's beat up, but Terrell Suggs, you're going to get there. Do you look at Rob Ninkovich and say, come on, Rob Ninkovich, now it's your time? I don't.
No, but I would look at him more that way if Jones becomes who I think he's hopefully going to become. Because Ninkovich has limitations as to who he is physically. But I do think he has the knack for this right tackle might beat me on 9 snaps. But there's a chance that the 10th one that matters, I'm going to beat him. I have something that I've been saving. I have read him. I've done this. I've said, to me, he has that.
Yeah, and he did it against the Jets in the overtime game. Huge play. Huge sack. Strip sack. He ends the game.
So I think he's a playmaker.
That's a play. That's
a playmaker.
He doesn't
have the talent to do it on a defensive player of the year kind of level.
Right.
He can do it as a, and that's, he's great when he's your, 5th best playmaker on defense. That's how you end up with a great defense because you have the All-Pro, the Pro Bowler here, the Mayo, but they don't have enough of those guys.
You know,
Mayo took a step forward, I think, mocking myself. Was this year 5 for him or 6? 5.
Yeah, I don't
know. He took a year 5 jump, I think, in terms of playmaking. And some of that was health, some of that was the defense and the position, but they just need more guys to make plays. Find playmakers, Fred. Go get them now out of our lads, Purple Edition.
I'm on it. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we got Victor in Ecuador, Paulie in L.A., and Chester in Portland on the phone. We'll be right back.
Verizon Fios is America's fastest internet. How fast is that? Faster than Patriots linebacker Gerard Mayo can take down a quarterback, a running back, tight end, or an offensive lineman who just got in the way. In fact, Verizon Fios Internet is more than twice as fast as anything you've ever seen. And that means Patriots scores, videos, highlights, and more right when you want them. Fios is built to support multiple devices simultaneously with a constant stream of your favorite Patriots content. And that means you get Gerard Mayo's sacks at Gerard Mayo's speed.
Now that's fast.
Welcome to a world of football where and when you want it. Welcome to Life on Fios, proud sponsor of the New England Patriots. Fios available in select areas. Internet speeds up to 300 down and 65 up megabits per second available.
Like so many soldiers returning home from combat, adjusting to life as a civilian hasn't been easy for retired Army Staff Sergeant Ben Dellinger.
The hardest part was getting out. You don't lose your friends, but like basically all those people get taken away from you all at once. It felt like my life was over at times. Everything I thought I was totally different.
American heroes like Ben face many challenges when they return home. That's why, for more than 90 years, Bank of America has partnered with military organizations to support jobs, housing, and critical needs of veterans and their families. We're also committed to recruiting and hiring veterans, reservists, and military spouses. And for Ben, we partnered with Military Warrior Support Foundation to award his family a mortgage-free home.
This is something I never expected to happen, and I'm truly grateful to each and every person involved.
To find out more about Bank of America's efforts, visit bankofamerica.com/military support. 2013 Bank of America Corporation. Bank of America, N.A. member FDIC.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, great moments in PFW in Progress history.
From the photos Andy was telling me about.
No. Unlike the rest of the world, I didn't clamor to go see
Brett Favre's junk when it was available online. I still have not seen his junk, just like I haven't seen Greg Oden's. I don't seek out male penises.
See?
Unlike some men in this world.
Couldn't agree with him more. I've never seen one of those photos.
But I like breasts. But they said Jen Sterger photos available, see why Favre was after her online. I'd be dialing it up tonight.
Matter of fact, I have done that.
I like breasts. I'm passionate about breasts.
I think that's really funny, though. Why would you ever do like a Google search on Greg Oden's junk?
Right.
Did you see Brett Favre's?
Yes.
Did you see Brandon Spikes?
Yes.
I don't get that. I don't know why you would want to see
just
that.
Watching it.
That's another great moment from PFW in Progress.
I heard the Celtics might be getting Lamar Odom. Or is that Greg Oden?
Greg Oden.
I don't know.
Greg Oden.
Who's Lamar Odom?
Lamar Odom
went to URI. NBA player.
Mr. Khloe Kardashian.
Yeah, bounced around.
All right, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline.
You just blew that. I heard the Celtics might get Lamar Odom.
Which is the one that showed his stuff?
Greg Oden.
Greg Oden.
He's the 65-year-old guy who's played like 5 games as the number one pick.
Okay.
But yes, he showed his junk and you saw it.
I didn't see his.
Yes, you said it right on.
I saw Brett Favre's and Brandon Spikes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm not sure he said Odom.
Oh, really?
I did not. I did. Would I not admit it if I did?
So you're a football
because I thought it was on the promo.
Yeah. But I
said I don't know why you would do a Google search on Greg Oden's junk.
Right.
And then I said, "Did you see Brett Favre's?" And he said,
"Yes."
Have you seen Brandon Spikes? And you said,
"Yes." But I didn't.
So you focus on football players' junk. That's kind of your. I believe you're on the record saying you can't stop looking at crotches for football players.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. It's not because he didn't want to see Greg Oden's junk. He's just not in the NFL.
If you were in the NFL, he'd see it.
Just doing research, seeing what all the hubbub's about.
The hubbub.
Victor's in Ecuador. Hey, Victor.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. You sound like you're in Ecuador. What's going on over there?
Not much. Listen, if it kind of sick, if for the past couple of weeks I've been watching games only in which we lost. I mean, like all the games in which we lost the last season.
Yeah, that sounds very sick. Why would you do that?
I don't know. I was just, you know, while watching all those games, I found it, you know, it's like every time we lose a game, it's the same pattern. I mean, when the offense, like, doesn't get a quick lead, like a double-digit lead, it's like it gets too close. You know, it's like Brady especially, he gets, like, frustrated. And I think that's because they have a complete distrust on the defense. So they feel like, if they don't get a quick lead, they're going to lose that game. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, there's certainly a body language, mental factor a lot of times when Brady gets frustrated, and a lot of times that comes in losses. But we've talked about this. We see that at times in wins, the frustration, the little spurts, a few three and outs, and he's getting antsy in the pocket, and he going to the sideline pissed, and so I don't know that it's only occurred in the losses, but there might be something to that. Maybe they do feel, you know, and we've talked about that, the Peyton Manning syndrome. You have to score every time you have the ball. You know your defense stinks. You need to build a lead. You need to play from ahead. And they certainly have some degree of that here. And that's a lot of pressure for a quarterback and an offensive player to have.
Yep. All right, Victor, thanks for the call. Let's go to Paulie in L.A. Hey, Paulie.
How you doing, guys?
Good. What's happening?
Awesome. Not much. I have a question for you guys about the 2-year jump.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the year 2 jump, not the 2-year jump. There's a difference.
Well, I'm rebranding it.
Okay.
Because you care?
Yeah.
What is it? The year 2 jump?
The year 2 jump. Belichick, it started with Belichick. He often says that the biggest leap a player makes is from his first to his second year. And I sort of mocked Paul. Because over the years, there are certain guys we've said, you know, he might have a breakout year. You know, Lawrence Maroney, in year 4, he's going to really come into his own. And, you know, that doesn't happen. There's no year 4 jump.
You exaggerate. You do.
Who has the bigger jump, Dante or Chandler?
Dante.
He
has to. I thought he was not very good. I was disappointed in his first year. Whereas Jones,
I think the more important position.
That's a good question.
I want to go with Chandler because I rely on him more to make those kind of plays.
Yeah, but I mean, if he has that big a jump, you're talking defensive player of the year. Because I think if he puts together a full season like he had the chance to put together early, and he's already shown that ability. I mean, now you're talking about 12 to 15 sacks if you can balance out your season, not get hurt, play 16 games. So I don't know. I think that's a little unlikely at this point.
You know how Cunningham came back this year and he had some good size? He had a lot more chest and bigger size to him. Would you agree?
The NFL certainly
would
did.
Too, yeah.
I think Chandler Jones comes back with a little bigger of a, you know, weight to him, little weight class
Well,
to him.
I hope he's
going to work out with his brother.
Yeah, I think he fills out a little bit.
I just hope he doesn't miss four games as a result like Cunningham did.
Yeah, he...
if you know what I mean.
Don't take Adderall.
I do.
I think he's going to need to...
positive, Eric.
Yeah, he's going to need to bulk up a little bit. I think that he did wear down as the season went on. I think that it was part due to the ankle issues that he had, but also I don't think he was very strong, and I think he got a little bit worn down.
Well, he never played.
And he's
much,
a little
ever.
Bit, yeah. And he talked about it a little bit. I talked to him at the end of the season about it a little bit.
All right, Peter.
And he did well. And you know, unlike Peter, I actually did talk to him.
Peter,
check.
I have one last very selfish question. I was able to be in New Orleans this past weekend, and of all your experiences of going to different Super Bowls and stuff, of the different cities, are the cities so congested and packed that you guys found it frustrating to go to dinner or get around the city, or have the cities been rather accessible and well managed?
It
varies.
Once you get to Thursday through Sunday, it gets pretty crowded.
But like,
no matter
Houston
where you are.
Was more spread out. I mean,
yeah,
like because it's
Indy,
enormous. New Orleans, everything is kind of centrally located, so everybody who comes.
Yeah.
And what do they say? Like 300,000 people come or something to the Super Bowl.
Right.
That's a lot of people to have all in one area in some of these cities that aren't really.
Yeah, like Indy was very
spread
crowded towards the end of the week.
But early in the week, it was
early
great.
In the week, it was fine. Yeah.
But you couldn't get downtown, like Fred said. That once that Thursday hits, everybody comes, and you can't move around downtown.
No.
Once they jack up the cover charge in the strip clubs.
Yeah.
You're
did you get to Brennan's?
Day for Andy and Paulie?
Yeah. What's that?
Did you get to Brennan's?
I there was no way to get food in that city unless you killed something and ate from it. It was
really?
Impossible.
Wow.
Well, someone probably
insane.
Took care of the
was,
killing
was,
something
was,
for
was,
you.
I had a very personal, frustrating experience, trying to get to go to restaurants. Everything was a minimum at 9:30, 10 o'clock, because I was working most of the time.
Yeah.
So by the time I was able to get out and go do stuff, it was, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And by then, you're an hour deep in reservations, and you go to, and not that there's anything wrong with New Orleans. It's a wonderful city for other people, but for me, there was nothing there that I wanted to go out of my way to eat. I didn't want to. The food is not of my, though I like spicy food, none of it was really of my my palate liking. But
now,
thank
did
you,
you
for the recommendation, though, Eric? I'm grateful.
Okay. Did you get into the Niners locker room to give a pregame speech?
No, I was, like I say, I was busy working the whole time, and I did get a chance to meet,
Well, no wonder they came out flat. You didn't give them a speech. They came out flat.
No, but I did get to go to the game, which was pretty wild, to be around some pretty awesome fans. Those guys are, like any other fan, they're passionate, they're dedicated, they're totally committed to their team, and they were as emotional as you expect them to be. And what was really, and this is terrible to say, but like, I'm going to say it anyways. It's like, hey, Baltimore won. Meh. It's like, I don't really, it doesn't have any feeling of like, yay, everyone's really jazzed for them. It's like, I just feel like other than Baltimore, everyone's like, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know isn't that kind of the way the Super Bowl is?
A lot of times.
How it's going. And even they were like, The fans were great. The Baltimore fans were great, too. They were, they were jabbing and teasing like crazy. And it was really fun. Nobody was, like, overly outrageous and
hostile.
Yeah, DB or anything like that. Everyone was pretty chill. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of smiles from their side. A lot of heartbreak on the other side. But even the team on the other side, they seem like a very cheese and cracker crowd, too. With all to put a good comparison.
Well,
to
get
it.
Down there, it costs so much money. It's not your blue collar fans.
Average Joe, unfortunately,
exactly.
been priced out.
Exactly.
Can you?
Exactly.
What were you doing for work down there? Why were you down there?
I was invited by Visa to go be a part of their Make It Epic campaign. So I was making personal appearances at the NFL Experience. I got a chance. Actually, Brian Oates.
Yeah,
one of
Brian Oates tweeted me a photo
by,
of
and
him
introduced
with
myself
him.
And said, on the down low, what a fan I am. And he was laughing. And I just immediately badmouthed Fred.
Oates shake his head. Yeah,
we appreciate that. Oates is a big part of the show behind the scenes.
Oatsy was my roommate at
Arizona. I think.
Arizona Super Bowl. That's my roommate, Oatsy.
Did they to make- be honest with you, I was saying how grateful I am and how much fun it is to be a fan of this show as well as the Patriots, and we had a nice conversation. And but that's what I was doing, and then I got to go to the Super Bowl as that character, if you will, and that was a trip because no matter where I went, everybody wanted to. You know, it was kind of neat. It was like being a celebrity. Everybody wanted to stop, take a picture.
Now you know what it's like to be me and Andy. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Now you know what it's like to be me and Andy.
Yeah, 49er fan.
I do. It's funny. It's funny. I do now. And thank you.
I'm waiting for the Ravens.
Were you wearing...
How to handle celebrityism.
Were you wearing that gold jacket everywhere you went?
Everywhere I went.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was a trip. It was a trip. Because that's what, you know, that's what they wanted for me, and that's what they asked me to do. And I was happy to do it. And you know, what's funny is how quickly I had to, like, they were saying, they're like, boy, you really adapt to what the fans say and do. Because, you know, every home, what I didn't know is that they played the spot at the stadium in San Francisco.
Oh,
so
makes sense.
All of the hometown, all of the season ticket holders who had won lottery were at these different events, kept seeing me. They're like, well, do we know you? We know who you are. They were, you know, the kids, it was trippy. You know, kids were quoting the spot, and then they released a new one on Wednesday with their internet spot, which was a minute and 15 seconds long. And that was a lot of fun because it had a lot more silly outtakes, and it was more outrageous. And it was a different take on the idea. Instead of like a speech where he had snuck in, this is as if he was brought in to do the speech. And that one, you know, popped up on Facebook on Wednesday, and then... I ended up on another radio station, internet radio station, a national radio station, to talk about it, and it was a lot of fun. It was a really surreal experience for a person who's I'm a blue collar actor, I like to say, which is I just do job to job, and then all of a sudden to have that much
money,
focus and attention on you is really neat. And,
cha-ching!
And, cool.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see what happens. One step after the other. Just get your paycheck and go to work, you know?
Yeah, well, Paulie, I was bragging right, about Paulie. You. When the spot came up, I told my whole family that I knew you. They were very impressed.
Oh, I appreciate you guys. And once again, let me say thank you for a great year. And I don't know if you got a chance to talk about it on Thursday, but a lot of the reason I feel that I got success in booking that spot was because you guys let me come down, hang out, walk around that stadium and feel the emotion of what it would be like to be backstage at a team that you love.
All right. Don't get all improv on us now. Method acting and all that.
Where's our 5%? All right. thanks, Paulie. Thanks for calling in.
I sent in a form of lunch on Thursday.
Okay. Nice.
Nice. All right, great.
Thanks Paulie.
Care, guys. All the best.
All right.
You too.
Paulie in L.A. Let's go to Portland. Chester. Hey, Chester.
Hey, fellas, tough act to follow there. That guy's great.
Well, you know, we're not all in commercials, but you hold your own.
You know, nice to get an articulate call for once, you know. But
wow.
Anyway, happy truck day, by the way, for Sox Nation out there. Offseason is finally here again. The spring training starts to approach, and I'm glad I got you guys as my Pats news to, you know, keep me going. But wanted to say congrats to the Ravens. You know, contrary to Pats Nation, you know, these guys as a team, I respect them a lot more. I think they played a hell of a game. And I think they represented the AFC well, and I think the AFC needed a little bit of a boost as far as the win category goes as a conference. But, you know, I question if Vegas had something to do with that power failure, by the way, the way that game was going in the beginning. But, you know, with Pats Nation seeming so bitter, you know, this guy Alvin in Texas is killing me. You know, he's posting that thinks the Super Bowl was rigged. You know, I think that they were consistent from start to finish. And again, alluding to your point earlier, I think if we were in this game, I think we would have been in a lifetime of trouble the way they were calling that game.
Yep.
I think it would, you know, just would have played to the opponent so well versus our style of play. But, you know, this guy kills me. I mean, he's an absolute captain verbal diarrhea out there. I mean, his calls go nowhere. And, you know, his posts are absolutely unreadable. You know, he got booted from the PFW Facebook page for posting pictures of Punta Gordas for us all to see, and that means fat.
Kevin, did you ban him?
You that,
wow.
Yeah, they booted him, and then he got reinstated. But, you know, anyway, look, the guy's
Kevin
got a good heart.
Him.
But, you know, Alvin, I'm going to challenge you to step up and get a good call out there because your calls just go into smoke every time.
Woo!
Caller on crime, boys. Let's keep this offseason afloat. Anyway, you know, the only thing that got smoked quicker than this kid's dope stash was Arrington on the outside.
Chester wrote some material for this call, apparently. You might not have Arrington to kick around anymore. Free agent.
I hope not for all of our sake. But Alvin in Texas, check.
All right. Well done, Chester. Let's go to California. Ryan is on the phone.
Would it be funny that we're Alvin in Texas the next
call. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Just about the Brandon Lloyd whole thing you guys were talking about, and then the David Givens and regarding that. I mean, people forget that David Givens was a really physical receiver, and he was smart. He would take the ball on a quick pass, you know, and take it 10 yards and just stiff arm a guy down to the ground. And I think it's that physical possession wide receiver that the Patriots really need. You know, Brandon Lloyd's more like a Jabbar Gaffney, you know, a third or fourth wideout, in my opinion. And, you know, as far as Deion Branch goes, you know, when he first came aboard, you know, I mean, he was a playmaker. He used to break plays for big gains with his speed, and he just regressed over time. He's not what he used to be. So it's a combination of things that the Patriots, I feel, are lacking. You know, Troy Brown was, you know, similar to Wes Welker in that they could get open over the middle, you know, and make plays or playmakers, but without having, you know, the combination on the outside surrounding Wes, he's kind of left out there to make all the plays himself. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I was big on a Vincent Jackson signing. I know he got overpaid and everything, but we're under the cap. I mean, why didn't we go out there and sign a guy like him? He kind of
that's an interesting guy. How would he look in that offense?
Right. And, I mean, you know, with him was the suspension.
Yeah, you say overpaid, but he certainly lived up to it in year one.
Oh, no.
I mean, there's a lot of contract left, but
in line with the paycheck, and he certainly earned it more than, like, Garcon.
He had a better year than a lot of
guys.
Other people thought he was going to have.
Yeah, he had a massive year, and I'm not a big fan of his quarterback, so.
And I'll tell you, if, you know, Ryan brings up a good point.
Thanks,
because
Ryan.
If you had him, you know, he's a bigger guy who's on the outside that can stretch the field. That's the kind of guy that they need. Malcolm Floyd. It doesn't have to be.
But you get him here with Gronk, and who knows where that goes.
Well, you know, these things happen.
Olivier's in Virginia. Hey, Olivier.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
First of all, kudos to Eric to have predicted once again the
he
Super
did.
Bowl champion.
He nailed it.
Yeah, he did.
Thank you.
You picked the Giants last year?
Oh, I picked the Giants last year.
Paul picked them last year.
Oh. No, he said once again, so I didn't know if you were on a Super Bowl.
I mean, I think he means the Ravens, because I picked them against the Broncos.
Well, yeah, because Eric picked the Ravens over the Broncos, and, you know.
Came close to picking them over the Patriots, and rode that Raven wave.
Came close to picking them over the Patriots. So you did it.
You nailed it. So I have a question for you. I've been listening to a lot of analysis and so forth saying, well, you know, Brady is getting older, which is true. Therefore, his skills potential are declining, which, you know, maybe probably true as well. But he's still a fantastic quarterback. And now, you know, do you think that Belichick and Brady are still going in the same direction in terms of Belichick drafting to be able to basically tool his best offensive asset with complementary other assets, knowing that Brady's skills are kind of diminishing because of the age and the toll on his body? Or do you think that there is a difference of recognizing what Brady needs to be successful, not only in the regular season but also in the postseason, versus Belichick, you know, being who he is, and I'm not sure if he's very flexible in recognizing the trend, but is he still trying to draft to be able to help Brady get to the hump? Or do you think he's starting to draft and build a team thinking that Brady is there for a certain amount of time, but yet he's going to have to give the reins of the direction of the team to someone else? Because I'm kind of feeling that they are not necessarily on par with one another and where they are within the game right now.
It's an interesting question.
I don't really think Bill looks
Olivier.
At it that way. Yeah. I think he tries to build a good football team.
I do too, and I think that he does a really good job of balancing the short and long term. I think that he always tries to take care of both. Now, you could argue that sometimes him worrying about the long term hurts the short term.
Right.
But I think that all of his moves, I think he does a really good job of trying to find a balance there. Now, I think, you know, the difference, everybody in 07 said, oh, he's changed his philosophy. He's loading up. It was Moss. It was Stallworth and Washington and Adalys Thomas and Kyle Brady and trading for Welker. And everybody's like, whoa, he's clearly going for it. But I don't think he looked at it that way. I think he looked at he was doing it with both, with Thomas and Welker, and, you know, immediately signed Welker for a 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. Brings Adalys Thomas for a 4-year deal. you know, I think that he does a good job of balancing that. I don't. Do you ever think that him and Brady are sort of not
No, I never
simpatico?
No.
But it leads to the question, at what point does Belichick start saying, I need to stop having this offense revolve around Brady and I need to have, you know.
Well, it already happened, I mean, to some degree.
You think
To me, when you drafted two tight ends and drafted two running backs.
That was to help Brady? Or
well, it's to help your offense.
Compensate.
No, I don't think I don't think he thinks of it that way.
No?
Like, I don't think he thought, you know, I'm just going to ride Brady, so we're not going to have a running back. When he drafted Lawrence Maroney in the 21st pick, he expected he was now pairing a great running back with a great quarterback. The running back sucked. That wasn't his fault. But you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think he thinks of it in terms of...
I don't either.
Like, I don't think he thinks... He's not expecting the next guy to suck at quarterback say, I'm going to have to run the ball and play defense because there's no chance I'll be able to throw it.
That's how I have to win. I think offenses in general revolve around the quarterback. And if it doesn't...
Paul Brady... I mean, Paul breaking ground again.
No, but if it doesn't...
Quarterbacks are important.
But I'm saying if it doesn't, you stink.
Right. And I think that's how he...
I don't think that you can, like... What you just said, you know, I don't think we're going to have a good quarterback, so we're going to run the ball
and try to.
You stink.
Right.
You can't play in this day and age and do that. That's why Jim Harbaugh made the change from Alex Smith to Colin Kaepernick.
Do you think when you're loading up your team for a year and figuring out who you're going to draft, who you're going to bring in a free agent, if you have a great quarterback, you say, well, you know, I don't necessarily have to bring in great wide receivers. I can get by with good wide receivers and then focus my energy on defense. Do you think there's any of that? And I'm not just talking about Brady.
There are a million factors, just like we all do in every decision we make in life, and you balance them.
In other words, how much help does my quarterback need? If he doesn't need as much, oh, good, I can now.
I don't know about that because I think if you can get a guy of, you know, Anquan Boldin's talent at wide receiver or Larry Fitzgerald, even.
But if you have to choose between Anquan Boldin and a linebacker, for example,
if they're very close, then maybe it comes into play.
Yeah,
what you're saying.
Right.
If they're
otherwise
close,
yeah.
But otherwise, I think you got to take the better player.
Yeah.
Right.
But like anything, any decision you make, you weigh the pros, the cons,
absolutely.
And balance
it out. And I'm just asking, you know, when.
Like, for example, I don't think I don't think he says, we're going to not get a receiver this year because we'll find a receiver that he's so good, he'll find somebody.
Right.
But you look at Brady's strengths and say, well, it's probably more important for us to get receivers that are quick, timing-based receivers because that's Brady's game, is finding guys underneath. He's not the best deep ball guy. Whereas if you have Jeff Blake, you go, I'm going to go
Jeff Blake.
I'm going to go get Vincent Jackson and say, you know, my offense is going to be based on getting the ball down the field.
Jeff Blake was a great deep ball pass.
I think you played it. It's all just one big puzzle and the pieces fit a certain way and you try to make them fit as best you can. But I don't think you say.
At what point does Brady now change those pieces? You know, where he is in his career. What point do you start?
I don't think it does.
Do you start to look at it a little differently?
I don't. The only place I look at that differently is behind him on the depth chart, a guy that I'm looking to be not just a guy to be the backup, a guy to be the backup and potentially be the next guy. That's the only time I really think of it.
You know, and you might change based on what Andy just said. If Ryan Mallett ends up being the quarterback, then maybe now I'm more looking for those guys that can get down the field because that might better accentuate Ryan Mallett's talent. Abilities to get the ball down the field.
Not solely either.
No. You wouldn't
just because you're still going to have to throw some intermediate routes.
Right.
And,
no, what I'm saying is you might not take. You might not take Julio Jones, and you might not be able to make the trade that Thomas Dimitroff did because, well, yeah, he's a great talent, but I'm not sure that's a talent that necessarily fits to what Brady's strength.
Right.
Ryan Mallett's, you know, 5 years from now, maybe I will do something like that because I think he does fit into what Ryan Mallett does. Maybe. You know, I'm just using that as an example.
But the bottom line is, and you hear this all the time, you know, I think your guy, Maserati, was saying it.
I love when he calls everybody my guy.
Yeah. You know, we've seen that Flacco. He's probably not elite, but if you surround him with a couple receivers and a tight end.
I hate that.
What quarterback can you surround with dog poo and he's going to be great? And the opposite of that is what quarterback that's, you know, of a starting caliber in the NFL can you surround with great receivers, running back, offensive line, and tight ends, and he's just going to fall on his face. Now, they're not all equal, but if you surround a quarterback with talented players, he's going to be better. If you surround him with crap, he's going to be worse.
Well,
his talent will depend how high or low it goes, but Matt, you need Mallett to be protected. You want him to be able to hand off sometimes. You want him to be able to throw to a tight end. You want him to be able to throw to a receipt. Like,
it makes no sense to say they're all quarterbacks. They all need help.
I think you could have made a case, though, that this year Robert Griffin wasn't surrounded by very much talent, and he's still
a 1,600-yard rusher. Offensively, yes. Santana Moss, Pierre Garçon.
Moss, yeah.
Alfred Morris had 1,600 yards. He was like third in the league in rushing.
Yeah, I mean, to me, a quarterback has to be surrounded by talent to be good. And if he's not surrounded, it doesn't really matter how good he is. He's not going to be that talent. I mean, they're not going to have that much success. So you don't look at it as this guy's gone.
Yeah, they signed two free agent wide receivers and Josh Morgan.
You know, Paul's Binky, Drew Bledsoe. There were times where he just wasn't protected well enough, you know.
Well, but part of that was his fault.
And, you know, Vincent Brisby was, a wide receiver in Crittenden, and, you know.
But that's part of what I think Andy's talking about. If you're a good quarterback, you can get by, and Bledsoe certainly did.
Sure.
I mean, that 94 team that won 10 games had no receivers at all. They had Ben Coates and
But how much better would he have been with guys like
right.
Randy
and then
Moss
they went out,
and
but then look
Wes
what happens.
Welker.
You know, and like to Andy's point, the 94 team had literally just Ben Coates, and they had a bunch of subpar guys that were out of the league 3 years later. You know, Vincent Brisby. Ray Crittenden, you know, these guys caught like 50 passes. Kevin Turner was a huge pass catcher for that team. Leroy Thompson. Remember Leroy Thompson?
Right, yeah.
Then 2 years later, they draft Terry Glenn. They end up getting Sean Jefferson shortly thereafter. And now you still have Coates, and you had drafted Curtis Martin, and all of a sudden you're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Right.
You know, yeah, Bledsoe was better from 94 to 96. He was a better player. But it helps to be better when you have that kind of talent.
Guys
every quarterback would have been better.
Guys who started on offense that year, Brisby, Crittenden, Michael Timpson.
Michael Timpson's another one, out of the league 2 years after that.
Right. Marion Butts.
Right.
Leroy Thompson.
3 yards in a cloud of
that's
dust.
That's an unbelievable coaching job by
John
by Hall of Famer Bill Parcells.
John Burke.
John Burke, tight end out of Virginia
Tech.
Yeah,
where is he now? He pops up every once in a while for some reason.
Burkey? John Burke? Really?
Thinking of Matt Burke.
Who's Matt Burke?
Center for the Ravens.
Different spelling.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you,
that's
Eric just gave me an unbelievable nightmare when a little while ago you mentioned Anquan Boldin. And I saw someone over the weekend wrote this, probably Mike Reese, because he always revisits the drafts. Anquan Boldin was a second-round pick. We took Bethel Johnson about 11 picks earlier. I mean, it's just like.
Yeah, but we also could have traded for Anquan Boldin. And
no, I know.
All right,
but then it cost money then. So.
Let's try to knock out some of these emails. We haven't read one yet.
Do you remember when they got killed for that trade, by the way, around here?
Who?
The Ravens got killed for that trade.
Let's see. John writes in, looking at the stats for Brady, he was hit 14 times in the playoffs and he was sacked twice. There was only one player who was touched more in the playoffs, and that was Flacco. You remember Flacco played two more games than Brady. Let's also remember Brady gets rid of the ball faster than just about anyone in the league. And then he brings out some stats. Brady was touched more than any other quarterback in the playoffs in two games. Some of this is because the Patriots throw the ball more than the other teams, but not as much as we think. New England had 94 pass attempts. Houston had 89. And then he goes down the line. You add the large amount of hits per game along with the fact that Brady gets rid of the ball faster than anyone else, and Brady might not be able to play better in the playoffs until he is protected better. No, Paul, I am not saying he does not hold blame. I'm just trying to figure out what we can do to help him be better. Since Brady is older, he does feel the hits more if we want to stay with Brady, and I completely think we should. We either need an offensive line that can protect him longer or receivers who can get open faster. I say we go with offensive line because I think we can get a good addition in the third round, and a better offensive line will help both in passing and running. If we do that, we can keep the first two picks for the defense. I truly believe helping the defense will make us better in the playoffs. So,
well, your offensive line has a chance to change. You know, I said to Paul, I don't know if you read this, Fred, but Greg Bedard talked to the Ravens defensive line coach and asked him to give kind of a scouting report on the Patriots offensive line. And in talking about Vollmer, he said something to the effect of, this guy's good, but, you know, he wasn't himself. You could tell he must be dealing with something because he couldn't really move out there. And that's something Paul and I have talked about. Was he held together with a cocktail of duct tape and Toradol this year simply because it's a free agent year and he knew he had to play every game? That's why I wouldn't touch him with I'm really just leaning towards letting him walk, not take even the danger of a franchise tag with him. So you're going to have some change on the offensive line. Now, the question is it going to be good change? I mean, is Marcus Cannon ready to play right tackle? You know, I don't know that, because otherwise it would seem your line is somewhat set. Ryan Wendell had a great year.
Yeah.
Logan Mankins is your left guard. Nate Solder is your left tackle, mm-hmm. and you've kind of decided that Dan Conley is your right guard. Mm-hmm. So you basically have one spot open for a right tackle. Is that going to make you better? Is Solder going to be better? You know, Mankins will be better if he's healthy.
Yeah, unless they tag him.
Well, Mike has an idea.
I have no interest in tagging him. You're just going to piss money away.
He has a plan on how to secure the O-line for the next 2 to 6 years. Keeping Tom Brady or whoever is behind centers is safe, and giving them time should always be a high priority. Here is my plan to fix the O-line for the next 4 years. And then he goes down the current roster and cap value of Mankins, Connolly, McDonald, Wendell, Solder, Cannon. Total cap space in 2013 will be almost just about $18 million. So he's saying you sign Donald Thomas to a long-term contract, 4 to 5 years. You don't re-sign Sebastian Vollmer.
I agree.
Then you move Marcus Cannon to right tackle. Well, that, I don't know about that one.
Sounds like a way to not have Brady.
You extend Ryan Wendell, I would say, $3 million a year or on a 3 to 4 year deal. Keep him at center. You trade Loken Mankins. Loken Mankins. It depends on our ability to get good value. He says he was injured on and off last year, but he's still a large, smart, dependable, mauling force.
A large.
Not to mention a multi-year Pro Bowl guard. Trade him. Many teams are looking to bolster their line. Many also have or would make the cap room. I say now is the time to trade him while he still has value. In return, I'm looking for a first round or two second round picks, or a combination of second, third, and later round picks, or even a player and picks, depending on the situation. Ultimately,
I don't think you're getting all that for Logan Mankins.
Ultimately, it gives us the best opportunity to solidify our line for the future. And then he says, spend $10 million, extend Solder, and possibly Cannon, depending on 2013 play. This is what you do in 2014. And bring the total O-line salary to around $25 million.
Why did we sign Thomas?
So who plays? So Donald Thomas plays left guard.
So he's got Solder left tackle, okay. Thomas at guard, Wendell at center, Cannon at right guard, hopefully, and then
who plays
he
right?
wants to bring in David Bakhtiari, who can fill in at left tackle.
I don't know. Right tackle.
He's, right guard.
Well, you can, yeah, he plays right tackle. You can fill in at left tackle. He's your swing guy.
He's playing guard or tackle? I thought you had Cannon at tackle.
No, Cannon's at guard.
No, he's got
Cannon's
him
at guard now.
Right, he's got him at guard. And then okay. your flex
confused.
Players are Dan Connolly and Nick McDonald. And he thinks that that would give him a pretty solid line.
I don't agree.
Well, I don't know anything about the Bakhtiari guy.
I don't even know who that is.
Sounds
no,
like
but
you're,
I don't, I'm
you're
not
replacing
real
Vollmer
good about
and
Thomas.
Mankins with a guy I never heard of in Cannon. I don't like that.
No.
Well, I'm just
all.
More
I don't know
concerned
how that makes
about,
you
and I've said this a million times, the more questionable starters I have in the middle of my line, I don't feel good about it. Ryan Wendell was a good story. I don't know that he'll be a good story next year next to Donald Thomas. And Marcus Cannon, I've yet to see anything that has impressed me with Marcus Cannon. So if he's not good and that hurts Wendell and Thomas isn't, now the middle of your line, and where is it always important to not have Brady feel pressure from? Right. Up the middle.
Yeah, right. And I'm not that Bakhtiari guy. I'm not,
who is he?
I'm not ripping him. I don't know who that is. Is he a draft guy?
Where is he
guy?
From?
Is he a guy
anything
that,
there, Fred?
Is he a guy that they want to draft, or is he a guy that's in the league now? I honestly
I'm
don't,
assuming he's a third-round pick.
I don't know
pick.
Who he is.
I've never heard of him. Or something like that.
So, he's not a free agent, so he's not a veteran.
I'm guessing he's a third-round pick because the guy said, I want to draft a guy in the third round.
Oh, okay. So he's a guy coming out right now. So we're saying a rookie third-round pick.
Which is no guarantee you'd get.
A fifth-round pick who hasn't really played.
Nah, he was actually
in
a first-round pick
years.
If it weren't for his...
And Donald Thomas is a guy who, you know, has been playing football for about 6 years.
Yeah. Nice
man. In place of Mankins, Conley, and Vollmer. How exactly does that make your line
you
better?
Got rid of an all-pro, a second-team all-pro, and a guy who's proven himself a decent player.
Right. Two first-round picks and a second-round pick. You're down to one.
I mean, you save. I mean, you save money.
Yeah. But are you better?
But I'm not sure you're better.
I'm pretty sure you're not.
I think
be.
In best case scenario, there, I'm thinking of your status quo. Best case scenario,
right?
Mikey and vandalism
goes,
is an.
I finally had an all-pro when you trade him.
He says, "I think you guys are overreacting." While I don't think this is about Gronk. While I don't think it is smart to have your star tight end going out wrestling and lifting people at a bar. Gronk is free to do what he wants in the offseason. We know this is how the.
No, actually, he isn't. If he wants to play for me and he wants to collect $50 million, I have some control. He is a human being. Yes, he can go do what he wants, but he can do it elsewhere. And I didn't, and if I believe correctly, Paul, the way this contract was tiered, he has a large chunk of money that's not even close to guaranteed, likely. Wasn't it like
the
a second
two and
half a three and
of
there
the
was
contract,
a,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so.
Right.
If he wants to do everything he wants to do, he can go do it elsewhere. Not on my dime.
We know this is how
Andy
Gronk
Hart,
is. And
turning
it
the
be
page.
Expected.
No, I love Gronk for, as more than anybody, but he does not have the all these people that believe you go to the NFL, you take all the good, you take my $50 million, you'll take my celebrity, you'll take everything else, and not invest anything in it. That's asinine.
No, but you know what?
If you want to do whatever you want to do, go do it elsewhere with no notoriety and no $50 million and go have fun. I wish you well. You're an American. You have that right. But if you're going to work for me and collect my money and steal from me, you have an obligation to earn it.
Which
is
why. You don't want to go on the show tonight?
What show? Yeah, if I did that on TV, I might make trouble.
Which is why.
But that's why they put that clause in the midway point of his contract, of his extension.
I'll bet you're right.
Because I think they feared.
Well, a combination. The back, maybe, and.
Well, sure. But I think they feared that maybe he might not be able to handle all of this. And
they feared right.
And then they have an option to get to cut him loose.
So, yeah.
So he needs to be careful.
And he needs to be careful just because it's the right thing to do. Grow up at some point. You can have plenty of fun without body slamming your brother on a stage in Vegas while drunk.
Anyway,
not many people actually do that, and they have plenty of fun in life.
Anyway, Mikey ends up his email by saying, quit being a bunch of government mules and get hip with the times, grandpas.
Screw you.
He also says, if Titus Young clears waivers, do you take a shot at him?
No. What do we want to add, more douchebags? Are we trying to degrade the locker room and take 5-year steps back?
Worse, an unproductive douchebag.
Oh, my God. The guy thinks he's
better
than
Megatron. Better than Calvin Johnson.
Mark and Winthrop
I like how his high school coach said, come on now. Come on,
really?
Be real. Yeah, because that's who he told it to. He was talking to his high school coach, and he said, I'm better than Megatron. And he said, what? Come on now. Be serious. And he said, no, I think I am. No, be serious. He's special. Like, the guy kept trying to tell him, stop being such an a-hole.
Mark and Winthrop says, I honestly don't think the Gronk incidents or whatever they're being described are really a big deal.
This really stuns me, because after the game,
will you let them
we got all these emails saying, Gronk 6 games a year, let's get rid of him. Now he does something
absolutely
asinine.
The funny part
to
me is they were more upset last year because he danced after the Super Bowl loss. Like, he's supposed to be upset about it like they are.
All right.
But now all of a sudden, a year removed, he's out with a broken arm, with a cast all the way up to his shoulder, and he's doing wrestling moves on stage. That's okay.
By all accounts, he's not into drugs, not getting into fights.
How do you
fights,
know?
Not
by
being,
what
how
account?
Do you know?
Because I've never seen a single account that said definitively he's not into drugs.
Well, we haven't seen one that he is.
No, I know, but he's saying by all accounts. What accounts? He sounds like Pro Football Talk. Show me all the accounts that are telling me he's not into drugs. I haven't seen a single
by
one.
By all accounts, he's not into drugs, not getting into fights, not beating any women, and seems to be a good kid in interviews.
He's a very nice kid.
While I personally was never a fan of the club scene, I was 23 once and wasn't a stranger to the countless forms of entertainment Las Vegas has to offer. The question I have is, at what point do these relatively harmless incidents become a concern?
They have!
For you, obviously never.
When can I get worried before I sound like an angry 30-year-old white man? If he's still topless on stage at XS 5 years from now, and is the idol of every douchebag in America, will it still be okay? Please talk me out of being concerned. Well, you're not going to hear that from Andy.
Nope.
Andy's concerned. He's right there with you.
Yeah, and no one, we started the whole thing off. No one is suggesting that he needs to be a 23-year-old kid who does not go to clubs. But if you can't behave in a club where your clothes are coming off and you're on stage and you're dive bombing with your brothers and all these various wrestling moves while injured, then you need to stay out of the club. So either be able to behave in one like an adult, or stay away from them.
The other thing about this that's funny too is the Super Bowl was held in New Orleans. He was in New Orleans the whole week. It's one of the biggest party cities in the world. He left New Orleans for the Super Bowl.
My guess is he got paid.
Yeah,
to be in Las Vegas. He's on top on stage. My guess is he was like a paid appearance.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then maybe they wanted him up on that stage dancing.
He doesn't work for they. He works for me, and I own that left arm.
That's
already broke.
Kind of money that this
team is giving him. Minus the wrestling part.
That's the part I care about.
See, the whole. But to me, the whole
thing is, he crossed the line.
Why are you behaving like this?
Well, in this case, maybe he was paid to do
to behave like that. Or he was paid to make an appearance.
Who's paying him more?
He was paid to be there.
This team or
not
that
to act like a jackass.
I don't know.
He probably got like
I know who's paying
up.
Him more. This team is paying
him
more.
We're paying him $55 million.
Simon and Molly in the UK says, Molly and I wrote you about Gronk last week before this latest Vegas episode. Aside from the risk of injury, shouldn't he be taking his career more seriously? He's missed the big game the last 2 years, and the whole offense seems to rely on him so much, rushing and passing. We paid him $50 million money. That means Welker is going to have to walk, and Brady must be thinking, I have 3 years left to get a ring, and my number one target spends his summers getting drunk.
That's a good point. I wonder what Brady thought when he saw that video.
And as I said last week, doesn't this highlight a real lack of natural leaders on the team? I don't think Brady, Wilfork, or Mankins are natural leaders in the way Brewski, McGinnis, and Harrison were. He's getting close to throwing away an incredible talent and potential career. I never saw Tony Gonzalez drunk, shirtless, in clubs. Wow.
There's like a happy medium. Tony Gonzalez would go to Mexico to learn Spanish as like a Mormon or something for the, like he was the other end of the spectrum. There's,
no, but
Brady had his fun early in his career. A lot
sure
of people
did.
Have their fun, you know, like, you
but
know,
Brady had his fun.
Dane Fletcher
right?
goes out all the time and these guys, you're always seeing tweets.
You can go out just like Brady did. Why do we have to be doing it like
right.
this?
That's what I mean.
That's what I'm saying.
You don't have to be Tony Gonzalez. I'm not looking for Tim Tebow. I'm not looking for a guy who claims he never did anything wrong. I'm just looking for I've been out. We had a lot of fun, and you do things at times you know are wrong. You know when you're crossing the line, and you choose to either cross the line and get kicked out of the club yeah. or whatever, or rein it in. But you know when you're doing it.
And the cumulative effect, too, is part of it. I mean, it caused a, you know, like I said at the beginning, right, wrong, or indifferent, it caused problems last year. It was a distract. It was part in the offseason, the summer of Gronk was an issue. Now, he could just sit there and blow it off and say, I can't believe these people are upset at me for living my life or the way I live my life. But it's inarguable that it caused a stir. And then the first chance in the next offseason, he does the exact same thing. So, you know, what is it going to take? Like Andy said, what did Brady think?
I can't think he's happy. I got to think he made a phone call to either Bill or to Gronk.
And not that Brady's the be-all, end-all, but
Tommy,
I just
look
wonder.
Look at what the Gronk is doing.
Is that better than mine?
No. No.
We need to get a clip of her so we can practice.
Dan writes in, I don't plan to detract from Welker.
I don't know what that was.
It was like Julia Child.
That was like Mrs. Doubtfire.
I don't plan to detract from Welker's reliability or toughness during his time here. The reality is we've seen enough of this style of offense in close games that a serious question needs to be asked. Is what Welker brings to the table invaluable or just valuable? That's why, in my opinion, with
valuable.
A gun to the head, if you can't retain both players long-term, the one to bring back is Talib. Why? Because I have more confidence they can find a more physical playmaking receiver in the draft. Why? Well, they haven't tried in a while. By contrast, they've targeted defensive backs in the late first round or early second round every year since 07. If they plan to target a top 10 to 15 talent, then Talib is expendable. But if they choose to return to the well, then you're trading one risk for another. If there's no sure upgrade to be made, they need to at least show more some consistency in the secondary from 1 year to the next, which has ironically not happened since 07.
We got caught up in the tight ends. There was a report from Mike Giardi on Twitter, our friend at Comcast, a source.
I forgot where the source was.
An excellent source.
About Talib?
Yeah.
With information close to the situation, saying that those in Foxborough have concerns about Talib's work ethic.
Well, it said sources.
Yeah, that's what he
Well, that's what most reports cite, is sources.
And, I don't know if they were in Foxborough.
He said...
Team sources.
The sources said there are concerns in Foxborough.
I don't think he means down at Good Food Store.
Well, I mean we're, you know, there's a lot of fans in Foxborough. Maybe they're concerned.
It's not what he's talking about.
You know? Words matter.
Yes.
Words matter.
Yeah, and you're ignoring the words. The source said there are people in in Foxborough.
Yeah, words matter.
He's not talking about the guy walking up Route 1.
But the bottom line is they're concerned
about
his work ethic. And putting in the extra time.
They thought he had a lot of chances to do extra work and didn't always do it.
In this building.
People in Foxborough.
I don't know.
I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying there are sources that are saying.
I have no idea if it's true. I'm saying that's what he wrote.
We're reporting that he has sources saying they are concerned about his work ethic
and aren't willing to give him
that kind of money.
They want a one-year prove-it deal or whatever. And I'm thinking he's going to say, prove this, bitches, four or five years, $50 million.
He should.
That's the going rate.
Mikey,
look at your results with me. Look at your results without me.
Mikey says to Andy, quick hitter, New England has great scouts. I'm sure they know New Gronk's character going into drafting him and re-signing him to his large contract. If you don't like him, then trade him. I'm sure 31 other teams would around the league would want him.
You really can't. We're not saying we don't like him. And
the person who
him.
Likes him, first of all,
we love him.
Who brought him up as the perfect draft pick before anyone in New England had even heard of him, and who loves him as much as anybody,
that
does not
true.
Want
you
to trade
see,
him.
There's times that, you know, on the overnights, I walk around the corner and he's just staring at this picture of Gronk.
No, every time I go into Dunkin' Donuts,
really
I hug the big cutout and take a picture with him.
It's uncomfortable at times.
Tim,
Eric, a lot of times you've already gone.
Tim from California. Tim is formerly of Walpole. He says, what the hell's going on? Can't New England keep Gronk on a shorter leash?
No.
Body slamming with his bro with a broken arm in Vegas. Time to grow up, Gronk, or pack your bags. I'll get off my soapbox now.
I won't.
Wow, people are really up.
We're not saying we want him to go. We're not saying we need to get rid of him.
The exact opposite, because this
we want him here.
Yeah, if he wasn't so important, I wouldn't care that
he's
here.
Exactly.
I mean, if this was Derek Martin dancing with a broken arm, it wouldn't bother me.
So if you knew right now, right today, this is how he's going to be for the next 5-6 years.
Then I would think that he is not going to have his career as good
but
as
what
it could
would
have
you,
been.
As a team, what would you do?
I wouldn't pick up his option in 2 years.
You wouldn't.
No.
I think about it, because he's not going to have a long and productive career like he should.
And
because you combine on-field physical ailments and poundings with off-field issues, that is not – every time one of these guys has a long, productive career, all we hear about is the massages and the Anthony Pleasants taking care of your body and knowing the cold bath and being a professional. They never say, you know what the key is? Vegas. February. Drunk.
You got to get really lit up between February and June.
That's not how it works. It's proven that alcohol is a detriment to recovery and muscle strength and all that. The more you take in of that scene, the worse you're going to be.
And how many times have we heard stuff from veteran players that say that, you know, when they were younger, they didn't take care of their bodies and they did, you know, they burned it up a little bit too much at night and they realized that they weren't fulfilling their potential. And hopefully Gronkowski, he's still young. He can still learn that. And I don't want to give up on Gronkowski. He's too good.
No.
He's too good.
We want
in
him
good
to reach
it. It's not like he's
parents.
A bad guy.
We want him to reach his potential.
But if
and
you,
he's doing things that won't allow that.
Your hypothetical that you just said, if you knew right now that this is what he was going to be, I don't know exactly what I would do. I'd wait till that option came up and see how productive he can be. But I know for a fact he would not be as good as he should be. Because you can't act the way he acts and be as good as you could be.
Mr. Well, Premium, if the scouts knew everything, they wouldn't blow so many picks and all these things over the year. They don't know. It's not a perfect world where they know everything and everything plays out how they project.
I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of emails that Andy, Eric, and I received over the last month with sarcastic comments about Gronkowski and his glass arm. And, you know, he can be relied on for 5 or 6 games a year.
People actually talking about getting rid of him. Right. We're not talking about
because
getting
rid of breaking
him.
His arm on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, like,
can't rely on him.
Right. Ed also says, to Andy's point, if you this is about the quarterback and talent discussion.
Yes.
He says if you surround Mark Sanchez with talent, would that make him a good quarterback like Flacco?
Well, he'd probably go to the AFC title game since that's what he did.
Yeah, I would say.
So he'd be
playing
for a championship.
I don't think he's as good as Flacco. Obviously, I have a blind spot for Flacco that I like that
but
most
that,
people don't. But
I think that guy just made my point and didn't intend to.
The point is exact. When the Jets had talent around Sanchez, they went to the AFC title game twice.
Speaking about Phil Simms and how bad a game he had, Stripper says after the, I guess it was after the safety, he says, it looks like they're setting up at the 20. That's what he said after the safety.
What? I don't know what that means.
Well, meaning he didn't know that that's kick.
What always happens after.
I guess
safety.
So. They didn't have the free kick and all that.
He was not good.
I think he had a bad game. That's not necessarily one of the reasons why.
He made me laugh out loud for something that I could see myself doing when he was breaking down the Jimmy Smith Michael Crabtree and he
just changed his mind in the middle.
More I look at this,
the more I look at it, the more confused I am. I'm like, no, what is it?
Make a decision, Phil.
Let's see. LT from Adelaide says, I just wanted to give a few thoughts, ask a few questions, leave you with a quick game in the offseason. Firstly, I think that the Patriots are talented on offense, but middle of the pack in terms of talent defensively. We need a guy to make the clutch plays on offense. I remember when Tom had Troy Brown, David Givens, Deion Branch, David Patton, Kevin Falk. who he could
sounds
go
like
to
a list of
at any one time. They weren't Gronk, Welker, or Moss, but they were dependable and made the play that was necessary to win the game. I wanted to ask you guys, in Paul's memory specifically, whether those guys caught those 4 to 6 yard passes and tried to get yards after catch like Welker, or was our passing game a bit deeper in the past?
I'm sorry, I was
he was
I
he was reveling in the fact that Northeastern was in Sports Center's top plays.
Number seven this night.
And I agree with Andy that our playmakers and high salary players are at positions which do not impact the passing game on the defensive side. And trying to find elite corners, elite safeties, and elite pass rushers is hard to do.
Rushers is not hard to do, especially not now.
I think that schematically the Patriots got a little more aggressive this year and the defense looked a little better compared to the year before. It seems that the Patriots are starting to build on defense, and I hope that next year another level can be reached. Is it normal for next year's team to start from scratch prior to training camp defensively, or will there be carryover and major improvements from this year? Well, yeah, I mean, there'll be,
there'll
a
be
lot
carryover.
Carryover.
They were better on defense this year because their overall personnel improved. I think when Tlaib came, I mean, you have to remember what they finished last year with. The Sterling Moores and the Antoine Moldens, right, and Julian Edelman, for God's sakes. They had.
Remember when Rap Sheet said that Edelman's future was as a DB, a full time? That's where he should play.
They had.
That was
real,
on the NFL
they
Network.
Had real defensive backs this year. They got better. They got better personnel wise on defense.
All right. What would you rather have quickly? Because we're running out of time. An elite cover safety like Ed Reed in his prime, or an elite cover corner like Darrell Revis.
Darrell Revis. Cover corner. Yeah.
An elite edge rusher like Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, Alden Smith, or elite interior rusher like J.J. Watt.
Edge rusher, but not all those guys you said were elite, but yeah.
Yeah.
Alden Smith.
An elite tight end like Gronkowski, or an elite wide receiver like Calvin Johnson.
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver.
Yeah.
All right. That's it.
I'll take an elite anything, by the way.
Yeah.
If you can guarantee me X position will be elite, I'll take him, unless he's a center. But even that, I'd probably take an elite center. If you can guarantee me elite, I'll take it. That's what I'm looking for, is eliteness.
Eliteness.
Is that not a word?
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress. Thanks for joining us in this off season. We'll be back Thursday at 12 o'clock. Anything going on between now and then that we have to get ready for?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm working on my big board.
Okay.
Draft prep.
Andy's big
fullback out of Harvard. Keep an eye on him. We know the Patriots want fullbacks, smart players. Harvard.
Check with Andy for all of your fullback news.
PFW, the newspaper is being printed this morning.
Look for it now on newsstands everywhere. Bye, bye, bye.
All right.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.